Well, hey, it's me, Leo Laporte, coming up. Review of the most expensive earbuds I've ever purchased. And a little sidebar on Bluetooth codecs.
And I'm Micah Sargent, and we answer a great question. Who exactly are VPNs for?
Then it's Johnny Jett with some great tips for travelers this summer. It's all coming up next on Ask the Tech Guys.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Ask the Tech Guys with Micah Sargent and Leo Laporte. Episode 1981, recorded Sunday, July 2nd, 2023. You biggie, me smallie. Ask the Tech Guys is brought to you by Lectric e-bikes. Rediscover your independence this summer with XP 3.0 from Lectric. Visit LectricEbikes.com to learn more and explore the epic models Lectric has to offer. And by TWiT. As an ad-supported network, we're always looking for new partners with products and services to benefit our audience. 99% of our audience listens to most or all of our episodes. You can grow your brand with authentic ad reads that always resonate with our audience. Reach out to advertise at twit.tv and launch your campaign now.
It's time for Ask the Tech Guys with Leo Laporte.
And Micah Sargent.
Hi.
Hi, Micah. Happy 4th of July.
Oh, my goodness. It's coming up. Happy 4th.
Yeah, day after tomorrow. Mm-hmm. We're going to take the day off. So if you watch our Tuesday shows.
Don't.
Well, you could, but they won't be fresh.
Yeah, it'll be the stale pantry.
But we're doing options. It today. This is fresh.
Yeah, this is fresh. This is new. This is the show, Ask the Tech Guys, where you call in or Zoom in or somehow get in touch with us so that you can ask your questions and have them answered live on air. Leo, what are some of the ways people can reach out?
If you're on your computer or your phone, better yet, your phone, call.twit.tv in your browser. Pop up Zoom and we'll put you on video with us, which we like. You'll show up in our Stargate, but you can also call. We have a phone, 888-724-2884. What does that spell, John? That's 888-724-ATTG. And that's easy to remember.
Yeah. So sure.
724. You can also email ATG at twit.tv. If you call that phone number, by the way, when we're not on the air, you can leave a message. So we have some voicemails. I'm told a fistful of voicemails. We have some emails, but we also have, I already see some callers. Before we get to that, are you going to see the fireworks on Tuesday?
No.
Petaluma's going to have fireworks.
Oh, I didn't know that.
We're doing what they call high altitude fireworks. So you can anywhere that you can see the sky in Petaluma, you should be able to see the fireworks.
Well, then I'm definitely going to see the fireworks.
Many towns, though, according to the New York Times, are no longer doing fireworks. They're doing drones.
Oh.
And the drones are cool, but they're missing something. I remember when I was at a lecture by the Stig, who is the former Formula One driver who drove for the BBC TV show about cars. I can't remember its name now. But the Stig, Top Gear, thank you. Benito's younger than me. His brain's still working. the Stig said, I don't like Formula E, the electric cars, because there's no roar and rumble like there is a Formula One. And kind of that's what's true about drones. They don't explode.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite moments. You get the one firework that boom, rattles you. Yeah, exactly. Rattles your chest. That's part of it.
The drones are cool. I mean, they could do cooler things. I saw a drone show in the French region, Bordeaux region. I saw the video, not that I wasn't there, where it formed a wine bottle. It formed a wine glass, and then a bottle tipped, and the wine poured out of the wine.
That's pretty cool.
All with lit up drones. So, yeah, because you're computer controlled.
But when people were in the Revolutionary War and they looked up in the sky, there wasn't wine bottles pouring wine into
American
glasses.
Flag waving.
Yeah.
Screw the British. No, none of that.
It's supposed to resemble warfare, and there's rumbling,
the bombs bursting in air. So I wonder if I think drone shows are great for, let's say, the Super Bowl and places where you can't light things on fire and have big explosions. You know, Disneyland has a firework show every single night. In Disneyland next door, the California Adventure, they have a electric light show. And I have to say, you look forward to the fireworks.
Yeah,
you really
there's something about it.
Yeah. So Elon Musk DDoSed Twitter this weekend.
Oh, my God.
That was hysterical. So Musk was, he says, oh, this is terrible. Everybody's scraping our content. So he set what they call limits on how many tweets you could see on Twitter.
Yeah.
And if you were blue check, I think this is what it was really all about, is to encourage blue check. You could watch thousands, you know, you could see thousands, I think 50,000 tweets. But if you were not verified, in other words, didn't pay $8 for a blue check, he calls it verified. It ain't verified.
It's not verified.
It's paid.
Yeah.
Only 1,000. And if you weren't even logged in, none, zero zip. And unfortunately, the way they implemented it apparently brought Twitter down on Saturday morning. Twitter was gone because they, in effect, DDoSed themselves. The way they did this rate limiting affected even Twitter's ability to show Twitter.
Oh,
and on Mastodon, there's a web developer who I follow, Sheldon Chang, who said, because a bug in Twitter's web app is constantly sending requests to Twitter in an infinite loop, Twitter is DDoSing itself, which is which on yesterday took the home feed down for most of the morning.
10 requests a second to itself to try and fetch content that never arrives.
He posted a video of the developer console on his browser. These are requests, unfulfilled requests, hundreds of requests a minute coming in.
So as more users become rate limited, then they're also causing this.
What Sheldon said is, of course, if I had been a nice person, I would have logged off immediately. But evil Sheldon was in charge. And so I stayed on for a little while because everybody who stayed on killed it. So anyway, I think it's back to normal. But it just shows you fire all the engineers.
That's what's going to happen. And you also like implement things last minute. That's what's going to happen as well.
Yeah. And I have to say, I feel sorry for the woman who they brought in as a CEO of the company, because she can't fire the engineering team.
I think it was Lisa Schmeiser who at one point pointed out that a lot of times in Silicon Valley, you see this happen. When a company is worried about itself going under, they bring in a woman CEO. They did it with Melissa Mayer. Wow. At Yahoo. Yeah. She mentioned several other, she cited
very
several other examples.
HP did it with Carly Fiorina. Interesting.
It's a bummer.
Yeah. Let the lady handle it.
Mm-hmm. And then it ends up going down, and then it's, you know.
June 30th, a couple of days ago, the end of the line for many third-party Reddit apps. Apollo, the best known. You interviewed Christian Selig, the creator of Apollo, on Tech News Weekly last week. As they started, Reddit started charging for access to its site. Same kind of the same issue as Twitter, which is they don't like these AI large language models scraping data for their benefit, but not for the benefit of Twitter or Reddit. So Reddit's going to start charging for access. And many third party apps said we can't afford that.
Yeah, I saw some of them did still.
Narwhal
figured out a deal with Reddit.
Is still going. So. But the real issue, of course, is the then revolt by Reddit moderators who said, hey, wait a minute, this is a bridge too far. All the people who moderated the very famous Reddit Ask Me Anythings, I've done one where you get famous, or in my case, infamous people on, and you can ask them any question. And that takes a lot of moderation. All those people were doing it for free. They've all said, well, you know, Reddit, if you want to keep doing those, you can hire somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But we ain't doing it for free anymore. I don't know if Reddit will survive this. So far it has. We shall see.
Yeah, the choice to have groups open back up their Reddit pages, their subreddits, and several moderators getting these sort of increasingly more vicious messages from the moderation team. Saying,
and one thing that the moderators have done on some sites like the Synology subreddit is mark them not safe for work. There's a little switch they have. You could say, well, yeah, it's not safe for work. And why is that? It's of course is safe for work. It's just about a network attached storage solution. But it's a bad thing for Reddit because advertisers mostly say, no, we don't want to be on NSFW.
Got it.
Subreddits. So it's a way of trying to take money away. I think it's just a matter of time before Steve Huffman, the CEO of Reddit, and the Reddit management just takes the site away from those moderators and says, no, you know, it's not NSFW. And we're
that's where run. I think it's headed.
Yeah. I think that's pretty much it, except to say that we have an all in studio twit this afternoon. Father Robert is in town. So is Brianna Wu. Mm-hmm. So is Ian Thompson. So that table over there is going to be full of real live people in just a couple of hours. Father Robert is going, it's going to be the official handover. Remember the Flipper Zero, the hacking tool that I had, the multi-tool for hackers? Father Robert is going to take it over because he has, even though he's a Catholic priest, he apparently has a dark side. So I'm going to give it to my better angel. I haven't done anything since I got it, so it's good to him. Turns out, even though Amazon refuses to sell the Flipper Zero, they're on track to make $80 million.
Wow.
$80 million worth of sales since they came out earlier this year. That's pretty darn good. Coming up in just a little bit, we've got a visit from Johnny Jett, our travel guru. And I will tell you about a long journey I went on, but a journey in my own mind. I bought these very expensive, the Denon calls them their Pearl, P-E-R-L, personal listening. And I said, well, let's go in for a penny, in for a pound for the pros. These are earbuds that say they are going to shape the sound to your actual hearing automatically. But there's even more. The story is very interesting. It has a lot to do with Bluetooth codecs and more. So a review of these Pearl Pros plus a discussion of high quality wireless listening. Does it exist?
Does it?
But first, we should get to some calls. What do you say?
Let's do it.
Oh, and Scooter X says, like everybody else around here, hey, what's the status of your color e-ink project?
Well, now Leo's coding in Perl, so it's going to be a while.
No, I will do it. I have to pick up some Python to do it, and that's what's slowed me down a little bit, but I will do it. I promise I will. Tokyo Tony has his hand up in our Zoom chat. Tokyo Tony, come on down and join us in the Stargate. He calls himself Tokyo Tony, even though he lives in Arizona. Hi, Tony.
How you doing?
From Arizona, yes?
That's correct.
Top of his head is from Arizona anyway.
I prefer not to be on the video, actually.
Oh, you don't have to be on video. Good. You're anonymous. Yeah.
Sorry.
But you told me, I think, that you call yourself Tokyo Tony because you lived in Japan for quite some time.
That's correct. I lived there for 17 years.
Wow. How come you came home?
For work. My son was, he was getting into high school, and we actually lived after that Singapore for 10 years.
Oh. So if you had a choice between 25. Tokyo and Singapore, which would you choose? Well,
I would choose Singapore for living. It's just a lot safer. Tokyo is very cramped. It's nice to be there in your 20s or 30s, but for a family, Singapore, you can't beat it.
Yeah. It's safe. That's for sure.
That's for sure.
It's also 80 degrees day and night all year round.
Yeah. There's no weather people there. It's the same. It's like Groundhog's Day.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
I hear, though, the durians are very popular in Singapore and the prices have plummeted of late. Have you ever had a durian?
I've smelled them. That's all.
That was enough, right? Yeah.
I'm told they taste better than they smell, but you know, I don't blame you for staying.
Couldn't get past it.
What can we do for you, Tony?
Yeah, I've got two questions about routers. My router, I got an Orbi router. It's a six Wi-Fi six.
Okay.
And do I need to install any type of security stuff? It comes with, for example, on the app, the Armor app. And I've been using this. I get these strange messages from Armor saying, we blocked a malicious site that you tried to go to, and that's on my video server. They have an IMAX app separately. I have no idea what URL it is. Is it actually necessary to have any type of security program or something for these routers?
Do I need to worry about that? I don't think so. All the routers offer some form of, not all, but many do, some sort of upsell. Eero's offer a $99 a year plan. Does Orbi charge you?
It's $40 for the first year, then $99 after that. But I just don't know if it's worth it.
I don't think you need. I would see what other features you get for that $99. That's a lot of money to spend. You can easily, if you want security, you could do what I do. Look at, in theory, the router is going to do the best job of security because it sees all the traffic. It can inspect the packets as they come in. It could see if they're hazardous. So there's a number of things it can do that something like my preferred choice, which is nextdns.io, can't do. It's a DNS server, so it's sitting out there. Whenever you make a request, it could say, is this a malicious site, and block it. It could do some additional filtering. but it's never going to be as good as stuff on the hardware. The question really is, do I need it? It, one of the things I bet it does is add, gets rid of ads. Yes.
Gets rid of the Armor security software.
Yeah. Does it get rid of ads?
No, oh. It just does. Oh,
that's surprising.
The only other thing it did was it said it blocked. I have a port that I'm forwarding, and it blocked a malicious attack on a port forward. But I just really don't know. I mean, I've got a firewall set up on my computer.
I think you're fine. I use Ubiquiti, and Ubiquiti does also have a malicious attack software, and I actually use it. For instance, I forbid any incoming traffic from China, Russia, or Ukraine, because there's a lot of hacking attacks that come from those three countries. So, and I don't deal with any. Ukraine's the only iffy one because some of the stuff I use is from Ukraine. But if I want to download software, for instance, from from a MacFun or MacPaw or whatever, I will say, okay, fine. Let's take the shields down, download it, then turn them back on. So there is some value to that, you know, just saying no IP traffic from China. A lot of attacks, almost all the attacks on my Synology, for instance, come from China. And probably your Orbi can sense using stateful pack, what they call stateful packet inspection, can inspect the packets and sense some malicious or malformed packets. So there's absolutely security value to it. So that's why I don't want to say turn it off. I'm not familiar with that particular software. Maybe it's not, you know, forgetting, they're all false positives, right? When you get those.
I guess so. I don't know if what site my video server is trying to request the URL for, because it
that's
doesn't
the
specify
about...
in the warning what the URL is. It says unblock URL. I go, I don't know what URL you're trying to unblock.
I've had that issue with Eero as well. That's this software is like black box. You don't know exactly what it's doing. And I've had issues just visiting normal sites because of it. So I've taken it down temporarily and been able to visit the site and then realized that it had just mistagged something.
For a long time on the radio show, if somebody had problems with accessing a site, I'd say, tell me what security software you're running. Because very frequently it was security software doing it. And this is the tension between security and, you know, complete free access. Security is going to lock you down somewhat, and sometimes you're going to get false positives. If you get a lot of them, then I think it's not good security software.
Yep.
And that's the question.
Right.
But on the other hand, that's a very valuable thing. My Ubiquiti silently rejects malicious packets, malicious traffic. When I look at the log, there's a lot of it. I am not going to turn that off, but the Ubiquiti does a very good job, and it does it silently. I don't have too much trouble getting to sites that I want to. I used to run NextDNS, and my wife complained that a lot of her sites wouldn't work. In fact, it's true. A lot of sign-up forms and so forth didn't. So I actually, for her, I disable it. I leave it on for me because I know what's going on.
We had trouble with the PlayStation Network because of NextDNS.
Yeah.
It was having trouble connecting and doing
NextDNS is like a Pi hole. That's that Raspberry Pi security software. I think.
Is there something I can use otherwise other than Armor? Can I actually? Is there something I can run on the router itself?
Oh yeah, there's a lot of choices like the Firewalla, which a lot of people like. I think Stacy recommended that. Stacy Higginbotham on This Week in Google. The Firewalla is a bit of hardware, kind of a Raspberry Pi-like device that sits between your router and the outside world. They have three different levels of protection, as you can see. And it's fast. It's gigabit, so it's not going to slow you down. But it's doing in hardware what that software is doing on your Orbi. So that's an interesting alternative. There's a number of products like this. But you can see it's the fancy ones, I think $500. It's not cheap. So right. Yeah, $485.
I'm just curious. Maybe it's not worth it. I just was thinking the basics of what the router should block and my fireworks on my Mac, firewalls on my Mac. It should be okay, right?
Yeah, if you talk to, hardly anybody's using these,
right?
So I think you're probably all right. I guess ultimately this conversation comes down to, and we always use this term and I don't like it, but your threat model. In other words, how threatened are you? You know, if you're working for a three-letter agency out of McLean, Virginia, well, then maybe you should run all the security software you can get your little hands on. But you're a normal citizen. You're not probably the target of a nation state attack. Much more likely, like all the rest of us, all the attacks are kind of network wide, kind of internet noise and that kind of thing. They're probably harmless as long as you do the right thing. You know, you don't open attachments. You're careful about the links you click. You're glad you have a firewall running on your systems. The one thing I would do sometimes on a Mac that people don't do, the firewalls on Windows and Mac are inbound only. It's not a bad idea to run something that looks at outbound traffic, because if somebody does get into your system, the next thing they do is they contact, you know, home base. And so something like Little Snitch, which is not paid. And then there's a good one. And I can't remember the name of it either. From OB. I can't remember the name, but there's a good open source one. We've talked about it before. Mm-hmm. Objective Design does the Little Snitch, but I can't remember who does the free one. But there are little free programs you can run. I don't even run those. But if you're nervous, you can watch for outbound traffic. Okay. Lulu, thank you very much, Doug M. It's called Lulu, L-U-L-U, and it's open source and it's free. And it impinges a little. You know, we've talked in the past about, you know, Steve always said, and Steve Gibson, our host of Security Now, always says, you know, you should run NoScript until you do. And then you go, well, I can't even use the internet. It's blocking all JavaScript. Yeah, I'm safe, but I can't run any JavaScript. Objective-C, S-E-E.org. It's a little pun on Objective-C, the language. Lulu, Objective-C.org. And I've used this. This is not very intrusive.
It ended up annoying me a little bit.
It might annoy you a little bit. Did you run it for a while?
Okay. Yeah. I just didn't end up need. I think for you and I, we do a lot more stuff, but we just don't need all of this stuff.
We are to some degree targets too. Mm-hmm. So it's our threat model is different than your threat model. I think you're fine, Tokyo, Tony.
Okay. I have a very quick, very simple second question. Should I turn on IPv6? Is there any benefit to do that?
No.
Okay.
I mean, theoretically, there's a benefit.
In theory.
For a while.
Is there harm in turning it on, I guess?
Yes.
Okay. What's the harm?
Well, there are a lot of sites that don't support it. I mean, there's just issues with it that just because it's better in theory. So this goes back to Vint Cerf and others, one of the fathers of the internet, saying, we're going to run out of IP addresses. And Steve Gibson has covered this in the past. For a while, IPv4, which is the one you're all used to, you know, 128.1.6.0, a dotted quad, but that runs out of addresses fairly quickly. And we were afraid, everybody was afraid that we were going to run out of internet addresses because it's such a small number. Nobody anticipated that the entire world would be on the internet. But guess what happened? A couple of things happened. One, your router only uses one internet address. All that stuff behind the router has its own private address. So most people are only using one. And then there is also ISP level NAT, which is helping even more. So it turns out the sky might have been falling, but we're temporarily holding it up. And IPv6 implementation has rolled out slowly, and there are issues with it. You could turn it on and see if you have any problems, but I don't think the point really is you don't need to turn it on. So why take the chance?
Okay.
Eventually, the IPv6 is the metric system.
There you go.
Eventually,
we'll switch over to it.
Eventually, we'll do it someday.
Right.
Eventually, we'll stop doing daylight savings time.
So, Tony, because you lived in Singapore and Japan for so long, you probably, the metric systems, you know it like in your head.
Yeah, the temperatures and distance. Yeah, and weight was. I'm a lot less heavy in metrics.
I only weigh 8 pounds. Stone. It's an amazing thing.
Yeah, great.
I prefer stone myself. Thank you, Tokyo Tony.
Thank you, guys. Thank you
so much.
Yeah. I haven't done any research on IPv6 in some time. My experience was I turned it on. And things stopped working. And I thought, I don't need it. And I think that's really the bottom line is you don't need it yet.
I've got mine turned on and I've not had any issues.
Okay. Like
the IPv4 does IPv4. That's why I was asking.
Yeah.
What did I do wrong?
What your router's probably going to do is have both of them.
Yeah.
And since a lot of stuff doesn't yet support IPv6.
Exactly.
So. You can't turn off IPv4, I guess.
Exactly. So one or the other.
That was my mistake. No. Yeah.
I do see we got someone who called into the number 88
Wait, I shouldn't do that because then I have to do 888-724-2884.
You fall into the trap I do every single time.
888-724-ATTG is the number, and we do have a wireless caller.
Yeah, and we're all wide open for that. I see wireless caller. Do I do that too? Yeah. Do I send him to the breakout room? Now you'll have to press *6 to unmute wireless caller, but go ahead and say hello. Mm-hmm. Hey,
oh, there we go. We heard something.
What's your first name and where are you calling from?
Name is Mark.
Hi, Mark. Malibu. What city are you from?
Oh, Malibu.
You're on the beach there. Is it a beautiful day in Malibu?
It's a beautiful day, but I'm on the east side of Pacific Coast Highway. If you know where Malibu is, you know where Duke's restaurant is.
Oh, I love Duke's.
Yeah. So you go up the hill to the top of the hill.
Yep.
And I'm right there in that little ridge.
So you look down on all. Beautiful right now. You look down on all the movie stars.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, when Sean Penn was married to a Madonna, they live about 3/4 of a mile. I can see their footprint when they had a house over there. The fire burnt it up, so it's just a footprint now. But I remember when they used to stay over there.
Nice. Were there a lot of helicopters during the wedding flying overhead?
Yeah. But yeah, it's always like that, you know.
What can we do for you, Mark?
So here's the deal. I bought a Toshiba Cosmos Media Edition. That's when they had Comp USA.
Yes.
Beautiful computer. You know,
yes.
The keyboard was easy. The screen was clear. Harman Kardon speakers. And I used it for a while. And then I just got busy with work and other projects. I put it aside and started doing a lot of stuff with my Apple phone. I've had 2 Apple phones since then. So now I got some time and I want to go back to use my computer because I have a lot of instructional discs and all that kind of stuff. Mm. And it just makes things easier. The problem is that when I haven't used it for so long, it went into the biosphere. Now, this is Los Angeles. This company, there's stores here that can, you know, get it back or remediate it because I want to go back to start using it. And then,
so when it booted up, it went into BIOS setup. Did it say I can't see the hard drives? I think that's probably what happened.
Well, it just said BIOS here.
Yeah,
BIOS.
Yeah, it does that. Normally, a computer, you know, when it boots, it'll look at the master boot record on the hard drive. Go, okay, good. The master boot record say, go look at Windows startup. It'll all start up. If it can't see the hard drive, then it's going to say, right. Well, I'm going to go into setup. Now, you can, in the BIOS, you can see what hardware is installed. You can see if it can even see the hard drive. So, yeah, that computer has been sitting on the shelf for 5-6 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could well be that the hard drive.
But it's worth it. Yeah, so you're saying replace the hard drive. So
Okay, so get ready for this. You may not need to replace the hard drives. If it's easy to open, and I think it is, with some screws on the bottom, open it up, disconnect the hard drive, reconnect it. Maybe after you disconnect it, whap it. Give it a good whap with a screwdriver handle. Because one of the things that happens with spinning hard drives, they call it stiction. The heads of the hard drives, if you let them sit for a while, they're supposed to retract. They're not supposed to touch the platter. But sometimes if you let it sit for a while, it'll hit the head of the platter and stick. And then there's not enough juice to get the platter spinning because I know you never heard of this.
No, this is new.
It sounds like I'm making it up, doesn't it? Anyway, it's called, you can look it up. I'm not making it up. Stiction. Sometimes I'll whap with a screwdriver just enough to get that head free. So what I would do is open it up, take out the hard drive, whack it. Don't like dent it.
Don't beat it.
Just a tap, just to kind of give it a little jolt, put it back in and try again. It may be either that the connection got loose or, you know, somehow corroded, so look and see if it's rusted and so forth. Make sure the battery isn't swollen and there's nothing leaking out of it. Sometimes that can happen. But if you take it out, you look and make sure the connection's good, you whap it, put it back in, nice firm connection, then try again. It might work. If it doesn't, is there stuff on the hard drive you need, Mark?
Well, here's the thing. If it's not there, if you have to put another hard drive in, that would be okay because I have enough stuff where
okay.
I can.
So you could put another hard drive in.
But I want to. Yeah, so that's what I want. So what it is and what I've heard that Toshiba has been sold several years ago, so yeah. Somebody else owns it.
They don't make laptops.
And then
anymore.
You know, you go to
So there's one other thing that the chat room, Scooter X, is bringing up in the chat room. There was a problem in the mid 2010s, 2014, 15, with capacitors leaking. And it is possible, Scooter X is saying, that the capacitor in the power supply has failed and the power supply is not coming on. I don't think that may or may not be the case. You're seeing a screen, right? And you're seeing stuff on the screen, right?
Well, no, the only thing I'm seeing is all black, but I get the little text, you know, bio at the top and that kind of stuff.
Does it say press F12 or anything like that? Does it give you any?
Yeah, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
So I think the power supply is working. So, it may not have enough juice to spin up that drive, but I think you're probably okay. What I would do is take out the drive and see what it is. It's probably a 2.5-inch laptop drive. That's got it's got a special connector, and it looks like a credit card size drive, a little thicker, obviously. If it's one of those, you can get an SSD to replace it. You're gonna have to a solid state drive. That would be a big replacement. It would fix a lot of the problems.
No, it's worth it.
Yeah.
No. So what it is, if you can refer me to one or two places, even if you guys have an outlet I could go to, because it's worth it to me to get it back up and moving, so to speak.
Mike has found a site
because I don't.
Yeah, so basically you're asking our advice on where you can find a hard drive to replace, or are you asking for a place you can go where they will do it for you? Which of the two?
That's, the place that will do it for me, the place that you say, these people are very good, that kind of stuff.
Got it.
Or, because like a lot of times, like a lot of these music places, like, you buy a music book, and they won't give you the disc. You have to go online. Who wants to do that? So if you have like a up to date audio visual media center computer, which I don't even think they make anymore, but really somebody here in the LA area, these guys can take care of that.
Here's the big problem. I don't think you want to put a lot of money into this thing. It's a Pentium M, so it's really slow. It's really old. It's somewhat out of date at this point. And you could bring it to Best Buy. And get the I want to call them the Goon Squad. Get the geek squad.
I went there.
What'd the Goon Squad say?
And they couldn't do it.
They said no.
They said they couldn't do it. Yeah, they go for the stuff that's like the last 2 or 3 years. They go for they're not really dedicated to like
They see a cheapskate coming a mile away. They say, I don't want to deal with Mark.
He's that's what it is.
He's trying to get an old computer up and running. I think you could probably do it yourself.
Yeah, I'm thinking you could do it. So
I have faith in you, Mark. All you need is a
pretty
screwdriver.
Pretty much just a screwdriver. Yeah, the Cosmio it's literally the hard drive has its own little area on the bottom of your laptop. Yeah,
so you can just get at it.
You just get at it. We will include in our links in the show notes, which you can find at twit.tv/ATG. The page, and it has a walkthrough set of steps. It's got photographs and everything. And essentially you would just get a new hard drive, and you can buy that in almost any place. If you get it at Best Buy, or you order it on Amazon, or any of these places.
There's some other issues though. Your CMOS battery may be dead.
I was wondering about the CMOS battery.
We could put a link in the show notes for you to get a new one of those. They're about $1, $2.
In a laptop.
We got to have a place in. You gotta have a place.
I don't know of places in Malibu. I really don't. That's the problem. I don't. I'm just.
No, no.
I know Dukes.
My car goes all over. So.
Okay, I know Dukes.
Oh, okay,
but we're up here in Northern California, and we're not. I'm afraid experts.
Okay. All right.
In repair places in Southern California, if the Geek Squad won't handle it, one of the reasons the chat room's telling me one of the reasons they don't like to handle dead lithium ion batteries because sometimes charging them up causes problems. And so they're nervous about that as well. If you could spare a few $100, it would probably be a smarter thing instead of spending that money to repair it to get a new one, to be honest with you.
And your concern with getting a new one is that you won't be able to use these discs that you have. Was that the big concern?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So this is a great thing too.
An instructional disc. Yeah, go ahead.
You can get for hardly any money on Amazon an external disk drive.
A USB.
A USB. So
drive,
even if you end up getting a laptop, you know, a new laptop, you just take that USB drive, you plug it into side.
Mark, are they floppy disks or CDs or DVDs?
Not even CDs or DVDs.
Oh, okay.
Like that, you know, and
yeah.
So what it is
for 30 or 40 bucks, yeah, you can get a USB DVD drive. I have one because they don't build them into computers anymore like they did in that day. But honestly, a new computer, you can get a decent computer for $500 or $600. You plug in the flop, the CD drive, and you'll be able to watch those instructional discs still.
So there's no computer right now that would have that feature of having a putting a disc inside the computer. That's done with then.
Well, you could try going to a big box store like Costco or Sam's Club and see. Sometimes they have older models, but nah, nobody's putting CD-ROMs into computers anymore, I don't think. Yeah.
Yeah, the technology.
Wow.
I know.
Just the way
you
do it.
Here's a portable.
Clarity. Yeah.
Here's a typical portable drive.
Yeah, we've got one that it plays Blu-ray. It's from Pioneer.
Yeah.
We've got an overhead shelf.
I have one at home. You know, I never use it. It's pretty dusty because it's just sitting in a drawer.
I've got one that when Apple used to make them, they don't make them anymore, but I still have one I bought in college and it just sits there.
It's a USB 3 connection on the back of it, so it'd be fast enough to run Blu-ray. So this is a tough one. I mean, ideally you'd get something. You could probably run those DVDs on a TV too.
Yeah, if
right?
they're DVDs,
do you need a computer for it?
Totally, you could. It's like,
well,
I just
bought an 85 inch with the HDMI feature on it.
Oh,
and then I have a couple of video players.
Yeah,
and
Blu-ray player. What happens when you put the disc into that? Yeah.
Well, I have a technician coming by Wednesday, and he's going to hook it up. So
okay, see what happens. See what happens there. It just depends if it's a Windows, if those discs are Windows discs that need the Windows operating system, or they're standalone discs that you could just watch on a regular DVD player. Let's hope they're the latter. Otherwise, you'd have to get a new Windows PC. I don't think it's worth spending hundreds of dollars to get this thing working.
Yeah, again. Instead of trying to put a bunch of money into this older machine, it's well worth just getting a new one.
I would say
and so. Then, yeah, $30, $40 on buying that external drive, and you're good to go for as long as those DVDs last.
Save a little money and get a nice piece of hula pie at Duke's for me.
The restaurant over here is Joffrey's. You ever been over to Joffrey's?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, that's a funny little place. I love Joffrey's. Right off the PCH, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
man. That's how we're moving over here. You know, you have to come by and check it out.
It's one of my favorite areas. I love driving the coast on the PCH. It's so pretty. So beautiful. And today it must be gorgeous.
They got Malibu is 25 miles long. It's like a strip of bacon. And they got 33 billionaires.
Yeah,
that's
that
not
amazing?
Including the people who are like $880 million.
Right.
You know, $700 million.
Yeah. Didn't Beyonce just bought a new Jay-Z and Beyonce bought a new house on Malibu? I thought I saw that they did.
$200 million.
Oof. They paid cash. Nice.
Walking around money. You know, here, take that. You know what I'm saying?
Let me see if I have that in my pants pocket here. Yeah, here you go. I'll take it. Mark, a pleasure talking to you.
All right, guys.
Thanks, Mark. I don't think we were much help except to say
a new machine.
It's not worth fixing it, probably, in all likelihood. There's so many things
don't
wrong
forget
with
to
it.
Eat your vegetables.
Oh, why do you say that? I can't eat my vegetables. I should eat
I said don't forget to eat your vegetables.
I will, but why do you say
eat
that?
Them.
Do I look like I need to eat more? Are you the vegetable king of Malibu?
No, that's the key to everything, man. It's the vegetables. That's the secret sauce.
Oh, I hate vegetables.
Longevity, right?
Damnation. I got to eat more vegetables.
If it results in me having $200 million and walking around money, I'll eat every vegetable.
Do you think Jay-Z's eating his vegetables?
Probably.
Beyonce, definitely.
Definitely, she's eating her vegetables.
Queen Bee. Hey,
well,
thanks.
You can pay that much money for a house. You can have. All right, take it easy, man.
Then you don't have to eat vegetables.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
See you, Mark.
Just filter out your body every 3 weeks or something.
Let me think of the last time I had a vegetable.
Are you kidding? You eat vegetables. Come on.
I had cream spinach last night.
I don't like spinach.
Spinach is good for you. Creaming it, not so good.
I just don't like how it.
I want to show you how I stay in shape. You want to see how I stay in shape these days?
I can't wait to see how you stay in shape.
I love my e-bike from Lectric. Vroom, vroom. Lectric e-bikes are so amazing. This is one of the models. This is one I've been riding around that I really like that folds up and all of that stuff. Summer in full swing. No better time to get out there. Thank you for hefting that. Very nicely done. Getting out there, exploring, and just in time, Electric is bringing you a fast, fresh new ride, the XP3. It's their latest e-bike model featuring hydraulic brakes. Snag your Electric XP3 e-bike this month. Experience freedom like never before. Electric e-bikes has created a mode of transportation anyone can ride. With quality, feature-filled models, finance as low as $73 a month, your adventures won't cost a fortune. They all include powerful removable batteries, a bright LCD powered by the battery, and there's a nice red backlight as well. I like that. 7-speed gearing, 5 levels of power assist to your ride, and get ready for this. The XP3's top speed is 28 miles an hour. It's the most popular e-bike in the industry, newly reimagined, starting at just $999. Now, right now, I'm riding the Cargo Expedition, which is great if you've got stuff to haul. The Cargo Expedition e-bike makes it easy with a carrying capacity of 450 pounds. You can bring all your gear along for the ride. Just don't let Burke drop it when he takes it off. There's also the trike. They now have the industry's first fully foldable, fully assembled electric tricycle. The XP trike features a third wheel for stability and can accommodate a wide range of abilities and preferences. Here is the XP3. All folded up. I'm just taking it out of the trunk. So you can go anywhere, go to the best trails in the area and unfold your bike, take it out of the trunk, and you're ready to go. I really love this bike. Pure throttle on demand, too. That's really great when you get to a stoplight. You don't have to step on the gears and pedal your way at slow speed across the intersection. Just put that throttle and you got as much as 28 miles an hour. It's fantastic. Rediscover. Oh, by the way, did I mention they come fully assembled? Burke likes that because I've made him put my other ones together. Roam freely. Reach up to 28 miles an hour with a twist of a throttle or use their next level pedal assist. Mike and I are riding around. Add cargo baskets, bags, comfort upgrades, even passenger accessories to specific e-bike models. I see a lot of families riding their electrics around these days. It's really cool. They cost way less than the competition. They're foldable. They ship free. They come fully assembled. I got to tell you, this is the bike for you. Rediscover your independence this summer with an XP 3.0 from Electric. L-E-C-T-R-I-C. Visit electricebikes.com to learn more and explore the epic models Electric has to offer. L-E-C-T-R-I-C-ebikes.com. I love my e-bike.
So nice.
You know, you still get the exercise, by the way. People sometimes say, oh, Leo, you're not getting exercise on your e-bike. Oh, yeah. I pedal. You get as much or as little as you want, right? Mm-hmm. I pedal. If you use the throttle, okay, you're just riding happy. But what I like it is that I can go out and I don't have to worry about hills because I know I'm going to be able to get up those steep hills.
Yeah.
It's so embarrassing. Lisa goes up the hills and I have to get off and walk. So now we both have electric e-bikes and they're great. Electricebikes.com.
I don't know what we should do next.
What should we do next?
Is Johnny at one? Okay. So we got an hour until Johnny jets. We have some voicemails. Let's do a voicemail.
Hi, my name is Winston. I'm calling from Boston, Massachusetts.
Hey, Winston.
And I wanted to ask a question about VPNs. Who are they actually for? Are they for corporate users or the average home computer user? Someone who just uses a computer for watching movies at home or gaming or things like that. I really don't understand who the VPN is for. Can you explain that? Thanks.
Yes. They started for corporate. That's my first experiences with a VPN. In fact, it was on the radio show. Mm-hmm. I needed to control the phone system in LA from up here in Northern California. So they sent me this Cisco program that I put on my computer. It let me log into the corporate network in LA securely. And that was the whole point of a VPN, virtual private network, is I'm joining the corporate network securely over the internet. And it encrypted my traffic, and I was able to run the phone system and all that.
It was kind of a janky system. It's come a long way.
A lot of people have bad relationships with VPNs because of that. I anecdotally, I've heard five or six people, anytime you mention a VPN, they're talking about their work and they're grumbling about how
corporate VPN. Well, the good news is that's not what these commercial VPNs are. They work kind of the same way. In the case of ExpressVPN, our sponsor, you have a piece of software you put on your computer or your phone. You start it. You press the button. What it does is it makes a connection to a VPN server. So in all cases, there's a client. That was the Cisco client that I used to run for the radio station. And there's a server, which is usually on the network you want to join. The difference between a business VPN and a commercial VPN for consumers like ExpressVPN is instead of getting on the company server, you're getting on a server that they run that then lets you access the full public internet. So what are the advantages? Why wouldn't I just join the internet from my house instead of firing up a program, join the internet somewhere out there? Well, there's several of them. First of all, everything that comes out of your computer once you're on that VPN is encrypted. That was more important in the old days when we weren't running HTTPS everywhere. You know, now we run secure browsers. When you log into your bank, Amazon, pretty much everywhere, including our website, you're on an encrypted connection. So it is encrypted. So that benefit has kind of disappeared. Although there is another benefit if you're at a open Wi-Fi access point, a coffee shop, a cruise ship, a hotel. When you're running the VPN, nobody else on the network can even see what you're doing or what your computer is. Even if you're on an HTTPS site in that environment, not running a VPN, they can see, oh, there's Leo's computer. You know, you probably gave it a name, right? That's why I don't give my computers my name. I give them, you know, weird code names. Oh, there's Leo's computer. And they could start messing with it. They can use things like the Wi-Fi Pineapple, which is freely available. Anybody can buy it. And one of the things the Wi-Fi Pineapple can do is impersonate other Wi-Fi access points. So one of the tricks bad guys might use, you're sitting in a coffee shop, you're on the internet, you're on the Starbucks Wi-Fi. This guy can see your computer. He can even query your computer, find out what Wi-Fi access points your computer knows about, and then say, oh, there's his home access point. It says Leo's home access point. Let me turn that sound off so you don't hear. Here's Leo's home access point, and he could pretend it is that. Now, my computer is going to say, hey, I know I'm on the Starbucks Wi-Fi, but look, we're home. Honey, we're home. And that's a stronger connection. So it gets off the Starbucks Wi-Fi and gets onto the hacker's Wi-Fi Pineapple. And now all the internet's being routed through the hacker's computer. Yes, it's encrypted, but still, he's now got network access to your computer. That's not a good thing. So there's still some value to having a VPN running at an open Wi-Fi access point. The other advantage you have is, yes, it's encrypted coming out. So whoever's providing the internet, your internet service provider, your telecommunications provider, your cell company, they can't see what sites you're going to. All they see is a blah, 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 blah.
Sounds like instead of brown adults.
Instead of Micah's going to see yahoo.com.
Yeah.
Though your ISPs and many telecommunications provider record that and sell it. They're allowed to. So that's another potential privacy, not security issue, but privacy issue. The other thing that happens is when you get to the end, when you get to the server, you're going to come out onto the public internet, well, not with your IP address, but with the server's IP address, which is going to be a VPN IP address. Now, that has advantages and disadvantages. One, it's an IP address shared by everybody else, you know, many other people. So it doesn't identify you specifically. Now, I should really point out, if you're logged in, as most people are, to Google, and you go do a Google search, even through a VPN, Google says, oh, hi, Leo.
Yep.
They know what you're doing because you're logged in. So you would have to log out of Facebook, Google, all those things. And now they don't know who's this 100.3.4.5. It's nobody I know. So you're anonymous at that point. So if you run true an anonymity, remember that you're often giving up that anonymity by just logging into Google or Facebook or whoever else. So that's important to remember. But if you have no connections to any of those servers, when you get on the internet, all they see is the IP address from the VPN. So that's privacy. That also has an advantage because, you know, if you want to watch video TV in a country where there are country restrictions, you could pretend you're in that country. You could say, well, I'm in England today. That's where the VPN server is running, or I'm in Germany today. And so sometimes, not always, that gets you around it. BBC iPlayer is a really classic example. BBC says, look, we only want our content available to people who pay the license fees in England. So they're really aggressive about pursuing VPN access. But the only way they know you're, I've asked around, how do they know you're on a VPN? The only way they know you're on a VPN is by the IP address, the VPN's IP address. So that's why those addresses could be a disadvantage, because they go, oh yeah, we know 100.1.1.1. That's ExpressVPN. We're not going to let you in. A good VPN service will rotate those, will buy new addresses. So some work better than others.
I have a friend who would watch an Australian show pretty regularly.
Yeah.
And my friend would have to watch it at the beginning of the month. And then about 7 or 8 days in, then
the system
would catch on. You'd have to wait until the next month to start watching again when it left off.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So I think those are the benefits. And I think there are some genuine benefits. Do I run a VPN all the time? No, because there are disadvantages. It will slow you down. You're going through other people's servers. Sometimes not a lot. Depends on, you know, how good a VPN you have. Some people say, well, I'm just going to run my own VPN out of my house. But that eliminates everything but the security benefit.
Exactly, because the IP is going to be your IP.
It's your IP address, but you still have the security benefit.
So to your original question of who's it for, honestly, a VPN can be for everyone. It depends on your use case. So if your use case is like my friend who wants to watch Australian content while in the US,
that's a good use case.
That's a good use case. Yeah. If you're a writer to the stars and you regularly go to coffee shops and you're worried about your mortal enemy stealing the work that you're doing, then it wouldn't be a bad idea to be running a VPN while you're at the coffee shop.
Again with the threat model.
And what's your security posture, Leo?
Well, it's not very good. Let's sit up more.
And then I know, right? Posture check.
It used to be you had to have one because of this coffee shop attack, and people, you know, I remember being on a cruise ship, and Randall Schwartz, who was a famous Pearl guy, but also liked to hack around. We'd get on the cruise ship. It was for a geek cruise, and Randall would sidle up to you with a piece of paper. He'd say, is that your email password? And say, yeah. He said, well, you're sending it through the clear on the ship because you're not using a VPN.
Wow.
Oh, nowadays, Gmail, Fastmail, all the good providers are encrypted. Mm-hmm. So he couldn't do that anymore. But when he did that, that was a real eye opener. That was like, oh, you're sending these passwords in the clear. So we needed VPNs a lot more before secure HTTP became widespread. Credit Google for that, by the way. They really lobbied to get HTTPS everywhere. Yeah. So there's the answer. That's a good question.
A really good question.
Yeah. And again, it depends on your threat model, your situation, your security posture, and how much you like to watch Australian TV. Can I show you these? I have a little story.
I'd love to hear about
it. I want to get more Micah in the show so you can answer the next 5 calls.
Okay.
But I want to, because there's a story that goes with this. So I got an email. I shouldn't respond to these, but I fall for this stuff all the time, from Denon. Which is a well-known stereo company. In fact, I have Denon receivers throughout the house. So I paid attention, and they said, we've got these new super good earbuds, the Pearls. You should check them out. Pearl, P-E-R, capital L, stands for personal listening. But it turns out, after I bought them, $350. That's $150 more than my AirPods Pro.
Yeah.
I thought, well.
But less than the AirPods Max.
Yeah, a lot less than the AirPods Max. But I thought, can you get better wireless sound? That's the key, wireless. So the first thing I'm going to say is wired is always better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the same devices, if you have wired headphones. And so if you have really good wired headphones, you're always going to get better sound because wireless has to compress. And in order to get the sound through at a more limited bandwidth, sometimes they compress an awful lot. But that's when I went down the rabbit hole. And probably, Benito, you're aware of a company called Nura, N-U-R-A. About 5 years ago, they did a Kickstarter where they raised millions of dollars for specialized Bluetooth headphones that would sound better. And they had a couple of secret sauces, one of which was that they would measure your ears kind of passively. You just sit there for a minute. They'd play some sounds. They'd measure your ears. And after they measured your ears, they would modify the sound of the headphones. They made over the ear and earbuds. They'd measure the sound of the headphones or modify it to give you better sound. Mm-hmm. So this is what they proposed as their personalized sound technology. The idea is
personalized sound devices play a range of tones.
They play a range of tones. They're Australian. Can you tell? Into your cochlea. And then they get it back somehow. I don't know how. They've got eight microphones on these things. But somehow they get it back and they say, oh, this is what your ear did. Now, it works pretty well, I got to say.
I think I've seen that video before. As
you?
I'm looking at the reactions, yeah, I probably went to this page and thought about backing it.
I did think about backing it. But then Denon bought this company. Actually, their parent company, Denon's parent company, Masimo, bought it a few months, or maybe a year ago. And within a few months of buying it, they released these. These are identical in every way to the NeuroTrues, except that they've now put the Denon name on the thing.
Yeah, even the little pad is the same.
Everything's the same. So I thought, well, I didn't get it in the first place. Let me talk about why you might want this. One is that technology, which they've rebranded Masimo, the parent company's automatic sensing technology. So that is kind of fun. In fact, I'll show you on my phone. I could show you my... Now, I ran it a few times. I thought, well, if this really is doing the right thing,
you would
it should
see.
Come up with the same result each time.
Ooh.
It kind of didn't.
Oh.
So, but I suppose that could also be because I was in a different environment. I don't know. It also, just like the AirPods, it tests your the ear tips, because it comes with a variety of ear tips and even like a little outside ring that goes on it. And it helps you choose the one that gets the best seal.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the personalized curve. Now, this is a little weird way of showing it. I've never seen anything quite like this.
Looks like you dripped your pen ink on the
app. The theory is there's a circle there. Where orange is showing is where your deficit is.
Okay.
So my deficit at 12 o'clock is one of the frequencies, and then it goes around. These are all the frequencies. So my deficits are here, but I can hear better in these frequencies.
Okay,
right?
Cool.
So this is the shape of my hearing curve according to the Masimo system. Automatic sensing. And I have to say, they give you a chance to listen default and personalized. I've used this technology. Apple offers it as mm-hmm. well with the AirPods Pro. You can do what is much more like a traditional audiologist hearing test, where you hear tones in your left and right ear and you push a button when you hear it. Samsung offers something similar for Samsung's earbuds and on their Samsung phones. But those are all more traditional. This one, you just sit there for a while and listen to some tones and it generates this. I have to say, it definitely improved.
See, because I find myself doubting myself when I'm doing those little tone tests.
Right.
I'm doing too much thinking about it.
Am I clicking right? Am I doing it right?
Am I hearing it or am I making it up in my head? So
these
something
are the
that
same,
does
this
it
the
automatically.
Same test my audiologist will give me when I go into to get hearing aids. So, but this is different. This is something a little different. And I suspect somewhat less accurate. Otherwise, audiologists would probably start using this one.
Right.
So once you've got it customized, you put it in. And then you pair it. Now, this is where I ended up going down a rabbit hole because, as I said at the beginning, wired is always going to be better.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about Bluetooth here. Now, in order to understand what you're getting and what you're not getting, you have to understand Bluetooth codecs, compression, decompression algorithms. In the beginning, Bluetooth was designed for those really silly Bluetooth headsets that Michael Douglas would wear, right? And, in Wall Street, that kind of thing.
Hello.
And you see people walking around wearing these all day. The sound quality was terrible. They were for one ear. They weren't for music. They were for phone calls. Eventually, the Bluetooth SIG came up with A2DP, which is a stereo, theoretically high quality Bluetooth profile for music. And then underneath the A2DP, they started coming up with new ways of compressing. The bass compression, SBC, almost everything can do. It's not great. It's low bandwidth. It doesn't give you a whole lot of quality, but it's universal.
Is
Apple
Sorry, just to clarify.
I can't hear you. I've got potatoes in my ear. Go ahead.
It is SBC that came after they started doing
it's
music.
It's part
right?
of the A2DP.
It was still better than what originally
it was
first
better than
came.
Headset.
Got
yes.
it. That was my question. Okay.
Yeah, it was musical. And in fact, a lot of times you're listening to SBC when you pair in your car in a variety of different places. It's kind of the de facto that everybody uses.
Got it.
Apple decided to go their own way. So all the most recent Apple stuff uses AAC, which is the same encoding that they use for the music when you listen to it. And in fact, they say it's AAC 256 kilobit, which is pretty good. Not CD quality, but pretty good. But that's the only choice you have. Sony has their LDAC compression. Also, they claim nearly lossless, very good. But the Bluetooth folks also created their own set a standard. Now you see why it's a rabbit hole.
Wow, yeah.
Called aptX.
I've heard that
been hearing
one.
About aptX, right? Mm-hmm. aptX has a number of different codecs, different ways of doing it. And the latest one, which is aptX lossless, it was SBC. Oh, by the way, there was also MPEG-2, MP3, Apple's AAC. There was high efficiency AAC. Because one of the things, one of the problems is you don't want a codec that takes a lot of energy either to encode on the phone side or to decode on the earbud side because battery is at a premium, right? So you got to balance audio quality, bandwidth, and how much computation you have to do. So all of these are ways to kind of balance all three of them. There's also A-Track. I think that's a Sony thing. But let's talk about aptX because aptX is not specific to anybody in general. There's aptX HD, which they claim, you're going to see this claim a lot in all these Bluetooth codecs, to be near lossless. No. There's aptX Adaptive, which changes the encoding depending on the music.
Oh.
So if it's complex music, it says, well, you're going to need more bits. We're going to need more bits. And we're going to do more computation. But then when the music is less complex, it will go down using less battery and less bandwidth.
So if you're doing a phone call, it probably doesn't need all of that extra.
Yeah,
got
absolutely.
It. That's interesting.
So yeah, so there's all these modifications. There are newer aptXs now, and that's what intrigued me about this. There is something called aptX lossless, which the aptX folks claim is as good as a CD. It is not nearly lossless. They say we are not compressing. Now, it is 1.1 to 1.2 megabits a second.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a lot of bandwidth going between your earbuds and the phone. But there's a second problem with aptX lossless. It was announced in 2021. No one supports it. I've been looking.
Dang.
Actually, that's not true. The Asus ROG phones do. Some of the Zen phones do. A number of weird Chinese phones like the Xiaomi that you can't get support aptX lossless. I don't own anything that supports aptX lossless. So in theory, these earbuds are capable of better sound than I can get.
Wow.
Now, they work fine with an iPhone, with a Samsung, with a Pixel, all of which can do some variation of A2DP, AAC or LDAC. And these supports every codec under the sun.
Will it tell you which one it's using?
It will tell you if you look. I ended up buying something. Creative offers for under $50. This is the weirdest little thing. It's a little dongle. It's a Bluetooth dongle, the BTW4. And you can plug this into anything that has a Type-C connector. So even though your laptop has, a variety of Bluetooth codecs, might even have, if it's an Apple laptop, it has pretty good AAC. You can plug this in. It's got a little button you can press on it. And it will let you go all the way up to aptX Adaptive, which is, 279 to 420 kilobits. It's about half the bandwidth of aptX lossless.
So still not lossless.
Now, I have played with this, and it sounds pretty damn good.
Yeah.
So now that you understand the codecs, it will be helpful to understand that because now you understand why, if you have an iPhone, you don't care about aptX. You don't care about lossless unless you're willing to go out and buy this little dongle and plug it into your iPhone or your laptop. I don't know if it works with an iPhone. It does work with Macs and PCs. If you have a PC that doesn't have Bluetooth, this is actually a nice way to add Bluetooth and pretty good quality. By the way, you might notice there's a couple of other things that it comes with. One is a microphone, because this is intended also to be plugged into PS4 or PS5 controllers or Nintendo Switch controllers to give you Bluetooth headphones, which is kind of cool. This is just an adapter for the Type-C to Type-A. But so now you have a microphone so you can talk to your gaming buddies, and you have the aptX adaptive anyway, the better quality aptX among others. So getting back to the Denons, this is the Pearl Pro. So probably all that really you really care about is the sound quality. But I have to point out, you're not going to hear the sound quality unless you have a device that's taking advantage of it. Mm-hmm. Do these sound better on an iPhone than the AirPods Pro? That's the first question I had to ask. Yes.
Okay.
So the hardware itself is better. It's better sounding hardware. It also has a feature which some people will like and some people won't like, called immersion mode, which is really just bass boost.
Got it.
If you like bass, this has incredible bass. This is the best bass I've heard on any wireless earbuds anywhere. You can turn it up even louder. If you don't like bass, the good news is you can turn it down and it can sound more normal. The zero mode is is heavy bass, mm-hmm. kind of similar to the Beats. The high ends are excellent, very clear. The definition is good. The sound stage is good. But there's one thing the AirBuds do, the AirPod Pros do, that the Denons do not do. Spatial. The AirPods are using... Oh, I'm sorry. I heard music, and that's because I have these in. Are you playing music now? So spatial is interesting because Apple is supporting a standard, which is Dolby Atmos, Dolby Surround, which a lot of record companies have jumped on the bandwagon because it's Apple. And they said, oh, great. So they've remixed stuff in Dolby. These do not support Dolby. They support a virtualized spatial from a company called D-Rock. It's D-Rock's Virtuo. And it is not true spatial. It's simulated spatial. The advantage of that is it works with everything you listen to. The disadvantage is it's not the record company or the producer or the artist who made the sound stage. It's just being generated. But it is a nice full sound stage. Doesn't do head tracking. Now, I don't think head tracking is such a good feature, to be honest with you. Yeah. When I use the AirPods and I'm watching my Apple TV and I turn my head, the sound starts coming out of this ear because the TV's over there.
Yeah.
Who cares?
I don't want
that.
That's
silly.
It's very silly.
You could turn that off in the AirPods Pro. This doesn't do it at all. The sound quality, though, is better, I would say, than the AirPods Pro. So you're giving up some Apple-specific features like transparency. This does have noise cancellation. It even has adaptive noise cancellation.
Oh, nice.
So if somebody talks to you, the noise cancellation shifts and you'll be able to talk to them and so forth. It's not as aggressive noise cancellation as the AirPods Pro. In fact, I'm not sure it would be as good in an airplane. I'll have to try this in an airplane. But it is noise cancellation. It gives you some isolation from your environment, makes the music sound even better. You can turn that off. In fact, this has a lot of different taps that you can have, four different taps, single tap, double tap, triple tap, tap and hold. And you can assign them to everything from turning the music up and down, next track, activating your voice assistant, Siri on an iPhone, Google Assistant on a Pixel. You can have it pick up the phone. This does support a phone. Nice. This is one thing. It might be a little bit better in the AirPods Pro, but this has four mics in each bud. Two of them are bone conduction. So the idea is this is going to get better sound. I did record some sound if you want. Do you have sound from my computer? I recorded in a fairly quiet environment.
So you can see this is recorded directly from the microphones in the Denon Pearl Pros.
Oh,
I don't know. Sounds not super rich and vibrant, but it's okay, certainly for a phone call.
It's good. You can hear the noise cancellation actually working. It's not full fidelity.
Right. A little crackly.
It's maybe a little bit better than the AirPods, but it's interesting. They're trying to do something. The one place where it's really better is a variety of Bluetooth connections, including Bluetooth lossless, aptX lossless, if you can find anything that plays it. In theory, that should sound a lot better than anything else out there. I think probably to most people, Apple's AAC 256 is going to be as good, to be honest with you, as Sony's LDAC is going to be as good. It does have a better battery life, 8 hours on the earbuds and then 32 hours on the case. So you basically can go forever. It's type C charging. Apple's rumored to be going to type C charging on the next generation AirPods, but right now it's lightning. So I like it that it's type C charging.
Will the battery life drop if you're using that better codec?
Ah, that's a good question. It's hard to test
because you don't have it. Yeah,
the key to having any of the aptX stuff work is that's a snap. It's a Qualcomm technology. You have to have a Snapdragon processor on the phone side or the player side, and you have to have some specific Snapdragon Qualcomm chips on the earbuds side. And I think they're fairly efficient in terms of receiving. The most of the calculation is done in sending.
Got it.
So that's where it would mostly affect your performance. These are weather and sweat resistance. A lot of earbuds have vocal cues for pairing and so forth. These are very good. It's a nice lady who's very explicit. So she says, okay, now turn on the scan on your phone and all that stuff. So I like that. I think they're very good. I would say these are probably as good as you can get in wireless. Okay. Even better, at least raw sound quality than the AirPods Max, which I compared it to, and the Apple's AirPods Pro.
Even the Max, wow.
Yeah, they're very good. They seal very well. They come with 5 different tips. There's lots of ways you can configure it. The negative, I think they're good looking. I don't know if you looked at this. The microphone, unlike the AirPods Pro, there's nothing hanging out of your ear. So when I put this in my ear, in fact, it's great for sleeping. Because when I put this in my ear, it's flat.
That's honestly what I was thinking about.
Yeah.
For sleeping.
So you can actually, I don't know if you listen to AirPods.
I listen to audiobooks when I sleep and
That was always the problem with the AirPods. Mm-hmm. She said, welcome back. Bluetooth connected. I like the prompts. So I'm now hearing music in this ear. But if I'm on a pillow,
it's not pressing it's up against.
And there's no, maybe that's why the microphone maybe isn't as good as the AirPods Pro, because there isn't a boom coming out. But I think it works. Now I'm going to stop the music by tapping once and it stops, much like the AirPods. It's not, you don't have to do that weird stroking that you do on the AirPods to turn them up and down.
You just tap.
One ear is up and one ear is down for, you can set it the way you want. The negative is it's $150 more than the AirPods Pro. It's $350. The surround is simulated. It's not real. And you're buying some technology that isn't yet widely available, which is aptX lossless. So I forgot to mention, it's also wireless charging. So you
can
put the bottom on your Apple charger, your Qi charger, and all charges. Qi supports Qi. So there's some definite positives to this. The price is going to be a stopper for a lot of people.
Yeah.
If I was sitting here with my AirPods Pro versus the Denon Pearl Pros, if sound quality were the most important thing, I'd probably listen to the Pearl Pros. But there are features on the AirPods you just don't get. Especially on the iPhone, things like that adaptive sound and mm-hmm. head turning and the true Dolby surround, which is, I think, quite nice on the Apple AirPods. So I know you were, Benito, very interested in these. Did you know about the Neuro Trues? Is that why you were interested or you just...
I didn't know about that, but that sounds very interesting.
Yeah. So this, when the Neuro came out, people were crazy about this. It's literally raised millions of dollars just for these, $1.8 million on Kickstarter. And then they sold the Denon, which I find very frustrating.
That is frustrating.
But the good news is now these are much more widely available. You don't have to wait in line to get them. You don't have to go to Kickstarter to get them. You can buy these direct from Denon. Although I think they're already sold out. The Pearl, there was a lot of interest when these came out. PERL stands for Personalized Listening. And these are the Pro models, which cost a little bit more. In fact, I think it's probably worth getting the Pros. So, way too much information. Poorly presented.
Why do we think, though, that it takes so long? It seems to take longer for people to hop on the audio improvement train these days.
Yeah.
Is it because we're just all...
Well, Apple doesn't want to do it because it's Qualcomm, right? And Apple doesn't want to be tied to Qualcomm. So Apple's going its own way. Samsung doesn't want to do it because it does use Qualcomm chips in many of its phones, Exynos, its own chip, and others. I think it also doesn't want to be too tight.
Because then that's one more Qualcomm.
Sony,
thing,
of course, has their own thing that they do. So it's a weird space. And I think there are people who don't like aptX. Maybe because it's Qualcomm. Maybe because they think it doesn't quite sound as good. I could tell you, using aptX Adaptive, which is the best I could get on these with the current devices that I have, including this cute little Dongle from Creative, formerly Creative Labs. It's the same people. It's the Sound Blaster people. It sounds better. It sounds very good to me. It's richer. It's fuller music. The definition is better. The high end's very crisp and clear. The bass is remarkable. I think that's more the physics of the device than it is the actual drivers. I think they put a lot of energy and effort into designing the best possible wireless earbuds, wireless being the gating factor. And I think they've done a very good job. So if you have a AptX device to play, that would certainly be a reason to look at this, especially if sometime down the road you get AptX lossless. I look forward to hearing something in AptX lossless. I haven't yet. Maybe an Asus Zenfone 9 or the ROG. If you've got one of those phones, this might be the right earbud for you. Okay.
Very cool.
Boy, that was a long way to nothing.
I disagree. I found it very interesting.
Well, that was the funny thing. I just thought, well, I'm going to buy these earbuds and try them out. Instead, I had this rat hole that
we learned all about Bluetooth
codecs. Yeah.
How there are so many more than I realized.
It's very complicated out there in the wireless world. This is why you kind of have to admire Apple, which has said, no, we're just going to do AAC.
Yeah.
We know AAC. Everybody's using AAC, you know, already if you're on the Apple platform. Apple's really simplified things quite a bit. But I have to say, Apple's not famous for sound quality. And I don't think any of the Apple devices, the AirPods Pro or the AirPods Max, are great headphones.
Right.
Best headphones? Wired. Period.
Absolutely. No matter what.
Period. Yeah. Shall we take a card? A call? What do you want to do?
Why not? We've got some folks who've called in since started.
I kept them waiting. Shall we go to the phones?
Let's go to the phones.
Let's go to the phones. Wireless caller. Press *6 to unmute. You are on the air with Ask the Tech Guys. Mike and Leah.
Michael, Leah.
Something
nice
like that.
Nice to talk to you.
That's nice. What's your first name and what city?
Tom in Orange.
Hi, Tom. Welcome.
Thank you.
What can we do for you?
My question.
Yes, sir.
I have a rather new Denon receiver that has Dolby Atmos, obviously. I cannot play Dolby Atmos music from my iPhone when I use Amazon Music, even though the songs are encoded in Dolby Atmos. I believe I've got all the switches set to the proper positions. It's premium Amazon subscription.
How are you connecting your iPhone to your receiver? Mm-hmm.
I tried to run a Lightning connector to an adapter, an HDMI adapter, and then I ran an HDMI cable to an input on the back of the Denon.
So I'm going to guess that what's not getting passed along that connection is the Atmos encoding.
Yeah.
That the iPhone
comes up stereo on.
Yeah, you're only getting stereo. The iPhone is, and this is where Apple is not going to probably let you get into the guts of this, but I'm betting the iPhone's looking at the connection and saying, yeah, that's a stereo. So we're going to send you left and right and forget the Atmos. Atmos encoding, all that Dolby encoding is an additional level on top of the sound. And it has to know that there's a Dolby decoder on the other end of it or the sound won't play. So trying to think what would be the best way to connect.
So ScooterX has posted in the chat from a Dolby forum or rather from the Dolby support site. And it says that Dolby Atmos on Amazon Music, it just doesn't work on anything other than headphones. Yeah, you can only listen to it through the headphones. So this seems to be a limitation of Amazon Music, which is unfortunate.
That's disappointing.
That's very disappointing.
Now, I don't even know. I try with Apple's music on my stereo, which is Dolby capable. And my receiver through an Apple TV, which in theory should all work, my receiver still says stereo.
Really?
So I don't know what I'm doing wrong. Yeah. I think it's hard to coerce.
To flip the right switches.
Yeah, to coerce it all. But that's too bad. The Apple Music app has not been enabled for Atmos, nor has it on the Apple TV version either. So if you tried to play instead of from your iPhone from the Apple TV, you'd have the same problem.
Yeah. So you should contact. I know, what does this do? But Amazon Music needs to hop on that and get that turned on, as opposed to passing it through. I would imagine that what's happening right now is they're going, the best music listening experience you can have for Atmos is when you're listening via headphones, and so they really are, you know, trying to get people to listen to it through that experience, but. With you, you've got this great Denon receiver that can do it. Yeah, you want to hear it.
I've spent a lot of money on my home theater system. I've got 5.1.4 and Dolby Atmos speakers in the ceiling when I listen to 4K DVDs and stuff. It's just beautiful. It's beautiful. You know, the F1 series on Netflix.
But I'd like to survive
the music. And yes, it sounds great. But I'm disappointed now that I can't get the audio.
Well, you could try Apple Music. I don't, you know, I bet you have better results than I did. I've been fussing and feuding with it, and I'm not sure. In theory, the Apple Music with a connected, now it's connected via HDMI. Maybe I need to get the right HDMI cable to go into my receiver. The receiver can do Dolby. In theory, it should be doing 5.1. I don't have Atmos like you do. You've got the speakers in the ceiling. That's awesome.
Wow, I'm even seeing that Tidal doesn't
very
have
few people
enabled.
Have enabled that. Yeah, that's why Apple Music is probably your best bet, and then you'd be able to hear Apple Music Spatial.
Yeah,
but
because you could over the HDMI connection directly. There's no adapters involved with anything. Yeah, if you haven't used up that free trial of Apple Music.
That's the thing to do. Try the free trial.
Give it a go. Yeah. And then you'd at least get to hear what that sounds like.
I have what you do, which is the Amazon HD music, and that's high res music, which is nice, but it's stereo only.
Yeah. And I just don't want to be tethered to the headphones all the time.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Exactly. Especially what you've got.
But you're saying the Apple Music isn't Dolby Atmos either.
That's probably me. Well, it is. That's Dolby Atmos. So in theory, it should show up as Dolby Atmos to your receiver, which should then decode it and get all the speakers fired up in theory.
True Dolby Atmos.
Yes.
Yeah. Leo was just saying he was having an issue getting his working, but that doesn't necessarily mean.
I still think conspiracy minded. And I've talked to a lot of people and I can't get a straight answer. Maybe Micah, with your connections at Apple, you can. That Apple really sees their spatial music as being binaural, as being designed for two speakers giving you spatiality. Because they sell AirPods, AirPods Pro and AirPods Max are two speakers. Mm-hmm. And that's their preferred way for you to hear spatial.
That or two HomePods.
Or two HomePods.
Yeah, which is again.
But not 5.1.
Right. You're not putting
it
in HomePods.
So it is technically Dolby Atmos, but I'm wondering if Apple doesn't think of it that way. That Apple thinks of it as a binaural, a two-speaker solution, because all of the calculations it's doing are designed to trick you with two speakers.
And then you're getting to more of an audience, right? Because not everybody can afford to do the full experience, but if they focus on that binaural.
I haven't got a straight answer from anybody, and I went out and bought a new 5.1 receiver specifically for this, and I've flipped every switch. Now I'm not convinced that I'm not doing something wrong, but I've really tried, and it still comes out of two speakers. So now you get spatial out of two speakers, by the way, and it does fire up the sub. But where's the rest of it? Where's the helicopters flying overhead? You know, where's the submarine pinging me from behind? I don't know.
Well, I just look at all the music that I pull up on my Amazon Music app, and I'd say nowadays at least 50% of them say they're recorded in Dolby Atmos.
For headphones. Designed for headphones.
Okay.
Binaural. It's what we call binaural. Remember when binaural was big?
Got it.
They would record albums with a literal head. Two microphones in either ear.
It's still the whispery people still do that. The ASMR crowd still
do binaural stuff. Yeah. I am very confused about Apple's intent here. It is Dolby Atmos, which theoretically has up, you know, downward firing speakers, left, right, center, sub, rears, maybe two rears if it's 7.2 or whatever. But I think that they really think of it as something designed for two speakers.
And I assume that these artists that record in Dolby Atmos are getting the music mixed in a full 5.1, 7.1.
Yes, I think so. I mean,
type of a situation.
There was actually just an article that on Tech News Weekly I talked about. I believe it was from the New York Times talking about Apple's push into Dolby Atmos. And one of the things that was talked about in the piece was how from the get-go now, many musicians are, and their producers especially, are doing this with spatial in mind, because the companies that are really jumping into the Dolby Atmos or jumping on the Dolby Atmos train, they are genuinely thinking of this as the next step in making music valuable to the youths, essentially.
And again, not primarily for Apple users.
Right.
And this is where I get confused. So I'm on the Apple page about spatial music with Dolby Atmos and Apple Music. At no point do they mention any other playback solution than two speakers, either their headphones or dual HomePod speakers. They do not, and they say, you know, if you want to listen on other headphones, turn off automatic, but they don't mention a 5.1 or Atmos setup. So it's not clear to me. I think as a come onto the record industry, they say Dolby Atmos, and you can use the Dolby tool to mix it, because they want these producers that you're talking about to say, oh, yeah, we're making something everybody can listen to. But I think when you're using, I don't know, but I don't get it. I think when you're using Apple stuff that it's designed for two speakers, I've not been able to get anybody to tell me the truth on this one. And I've not been able to do it with more.
Well,
yeah.
You guys made me feel a little better then, because I think I've been doing everything right.
Yeah.
And I'll just have to use my headphones or hope for something in the future.
Yeah, or do the trial.
Try
I would
Apple.
Love it if you do the trial and let us know.
Yes.
Because you're probably more adept at this. You sound like an audiophile. I'm just a bozo. But, I'm on the Dolby page, which ScooterX has sent us a link to, and it implies that it will work with any device enabled with Dolby Atmos.
They do say yes. Any set of headphones or using the built-in speakers. You can also listen with a Dolby Atmos capable home theater speaker system, soundbar, television, and of course they mention HomePod speakers.
But will it fire up more than the left-right speakers? I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
Can I use my existing home theater system to listen to Dolby Atmos? If your existing home theater system supports Atmos.
I found a support page from Apple. Let me get that over. And the title is Play Audio in Dolby Atmos or Surround Sound on your Apple TV. They talk about 5.1.
Okay.
They talk about, but see, they also mentioned stereo on it. So yeah, you're onto something.
I'm so confused. I'm so confused. Please.
And I assume Bluetooth will never work, right?
No. Forget Bluetooth.
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
There is no, I don't know what they're doing with the surround and Bluetooth, but I'm pretty sure it's not designed to work with five speakers or six speakers or seven or eight or nine or 10 speakers. Yeah. It's unclear. I think Apple's been somewhat unclear on this. Yeah. I want to see a statement for them. Yeah. You can use it with your Denon receiver and your 7.2 system setup. And all the speakers will be playing. What they may be saying is, yeah, you'll be using Dolby Atmos out of your left and right speakers, which is not what you want. So let us know. I want you to go put your ear up against the surrounds and get on a ladder and see if the speakers at the ceiling are working. I want to know.
I can do that. That's
Please
not
do.
A problem.
Call us back.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it a shot.
Please
Thank
do.
You, guys. I appreciate
Thank
it.
Great to talk to you.
All right.
Phone Great number show. Is Bye. 888. Thank you. 724-2884. So you have found a number of links.
Yeah, but again, it doesn't say.
Yeah.
But I do like, there's this, the last link I shared has some great diagrams showing how to plug things in. So this is good for me because I could send this to people who are asking about it. And it walks you through the steps of getting everything plugged in properly. It says some soundbars don't support video formats like HDR10 and Dolby Vision. In this case, you can plug the TV into the soundbar to play sound in Dolby Atmos, or you can plug your Apple TV, blah, 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 blah. So yeah, but again, what you're talking about here about it will take full advantage of the 5.1 or 7.1 surround sound system that you have. It's not saying that.
All right. We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
I should at least see on my receiver, which is Atmos enabled. It should say Dolby Atmos or at least Dolby. on the receiver, and it doesn't. I don't know why. It just says stereo, so I don't know. Let's see. Mac Bookie in our IRC. I do listen to Dolby Atmos and Apple Music on my Sonos Arc and Sonos Era speakers perfectly. And his brother does it on his Denon Atmos setup. So there you go. Somebody in our chat room says
someone's got it working. And Leo, next time you're watching something that allegedly is Dolby Atmos, press the menu button on your Apple TV remote.
Yeah.
And then you should see the Dolby Atmos logo. And if you don't, then for some reason, it's not playing in Dolby Atmos.
I think the Apple TV is doing the right thing. It's the
the receiver that's going on.
I don't know what you're sending me.
Arrg.
And it's just on music. It's movies and stuff.
That's good.
I'm getting surrounded on movies. It's the music. It's spatial. I think this is what our caller wanted: is spatial music in all its glory. And I still think that when Apple says spatial, what they really mean is simulated Dolby Atmos through two speakers. But it's unclear.
You know, one thing I can do too is Apple put out a few Logic programs from actual producers who did this. I'm going to pull open one of those. They were case studies, essentially. I'm going to pull open one of those and see how it was designed and see if it is targeting actual speakers or if it's just, it's over here and to the left of the head.
Let's go to, it says Pasadena, Maryland. Could that be a place? Let's see. We're going to pick up this cell phone or a phone press *6 to unmute, and you should be on the air with Micah and Leo. Ask the Tech Guys.
Hello.
It worked. What's your first name and what city are you calling from?
My name is Brenda and I'm calling from near Fort Smith, Arkansas.
Hi, Brenda.
And I spoke to you back in the 1900s.
In the last century. Isn't that wild that we can say, back in the last century, you and I, before Micah was born, probably. What did we talk about back then?
I had a question about how to privately get on IRC so people couldn't track you.
And did you?
And at the time, there was no way to do it.
Oh.
But you sent me a webcam, which was great.
Oh, you mean you talked to us on Tech TV?
No. No, after I called, somebody came in the chat room and asked if they could send me a webcam. And I was a little suspicious, but then they confirmed everything and they sent me a webcam.
Wow.
Didn't you have that webcam network thing going?
Yeah, well, that was Tech TV days. I don't know who that was saying a webcam. Maybe it was us. I don't know.
Mike B, wasn't it?
What can we do for you now, Brenda?
if you need help, if you need support for that webcam, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
My father was in the military and we're doing a lot of VA stuff and he recently passed away. And I want to back up this stuff, but it has very, very personal information.
Yeah.
And I put it on hard drives and things, but you know, if the house burns down, it doesn't matter how many hard drives I've put it on. But I want to know what of the cloud stuff. I've seen some people tell me, oh, go to this one in New Zealand. It's cheap, but it may be gone tomorrow. I want to know what your idea of somewhere safe to put this information that has very social security numbers and things in it.
Yeah, definitely don't put it on Mega in New Zealand. Those guys are going to jail. Right. I'm not sure I would trust them. any cloud you put it on is going to be a little bit of a risk. There is only one cloud service I know of that is fully end-to-end encrypted, and it's the one Steve Gibson recommends. It's Sync, SYNC.com. And it is, and this is what you're looking for, is end-to-end encryption. Every cloud service is encrypted in transit and encrypted at rest, Dropbox, Apple's iCloud, but the owners of the company have the keys. So if they decided, you know, they had a rogue employee, they could look at it. If the law enforcement came to them, they could look at it. And we know this is the case with almost all cloud providers. Sync.com is the only one I know of that is fully end-to-end encrypted for all the data. There are some others that have encrypted enclaves, including Dropbox. Apple is going to offer, I don't know if they've yet offered it, a fully end-to-end encrypted solution. They've been talking about it.
It's complicated to set up, but yeah.
Yeah, that's the advanced
iCloud drive. Yeah.
Yeah. I think here's my suggestion. Instead of putting it in the cloud at all, just put it on a second hard drive and take it to work.
Okay. Or is it home?
Or you know, so you got one at home and one at work. And unless Fort Smith falls into a sinkhole, you'll be all right. Or if you're worried about that happening.
Work is at home.
That's not a good solution. But give it to somebody else. Family, in other words, get it off. Get it out of the house. You trust your family, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So send it to your sister, brother.
I do remember putting information on floppy drives, thinking that would be backed up forever, too.
No, it's not.
That's just my concern.
So that is one of the advantages of cloud, is that there you're going to presume they're going to continue to make sure it's accessible over the internet. As long as they don't go out of business.
Right.
There's no guarantee.
Right.
Yeah, there's no really... This is a great question. And I don't know, Leo, for you, but I always feel like sometimes some of our listeners have even more concern about, you know, the privacy aspect of some of these things. Because I back up my stuff to Backblaze, for example, and I'm not worried about my social security number, I've got a scan of my photo ID that's in Backblaze, but I'm not concerned about that.
But technically it's not encrypted. That's the
right
problem.
Exactly. Yes.
So one thing you can do is what Steve Gibson for a while called P. I convinced him to change it to Pi, pre-internet encryption. He was calling it pre-egress encryption, which was not good. So the idea is if you take a program, encrypt dad's data first into one single encrypted blob. Mm-hmm. Then you can put that on iCloud or Dropbox or anywhere. And it's completely safe because they don't have the key. All they see is a blob. Is it, how much data is it? Is it a lot of data, Brenda?
I would say around a gig.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of photos and maps and things.
Oh, it's so wonderful that you have that. Where did he serve?
He served for 21 years in the Air Force. He was in Vietnam, Thailand, a lot of places out there.
Wow.
And he was just recently approved for his service-connected disability. So we're very proud of that. And we have all that information to back up.
Oh, good. Was it Agent Orange or?
Yes, it was Agent Orange. And I have lupus and a brain condition caused by Agent Orange as well.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm so sorry.
We're happy to have all that data. That's what did it.
Absolutely. So, and you want to save that too. Yeah, you want to preserve that too.
Yeah.
So yeah, encrypt it first. There are a lot of ways to do it. Probably the one that the open source one that everybody knows about is VeraCrypt, VeraCrypt. It's free. And you can encrypt it with VeraCrypt. Don't lose the keys because there's no way to get them back. You can't. I mean, honestly, it's probably okay to use one of the zip programs. Many of them have strong. You want to end-to-end encryption that is just as strong. So there's a lot of ways to do that. I would personally prefer that you do that than trust sync.com or OneDrive. Then, if you do that, by the way, you can put it on two services.
Exactly.
So if Dropbox goes out of business, you got it on Microsoft. Or if Microsoft goes out of business, you have it on Apple. Or if you have it on multiple services. And no one can access
it. And they can't get to it.
Yeah, yep. Once you've encrypted it. I think that's a good
idea. Great.
I'm sorry about your dad, but thank you for your service. And thank him for his service. And I'm sorry about your health issues, but I'm glad you got a handle.
Well, hey. Oh, yeah. There's a reason I have it, and I can take care of it. I do accessibility training for the blind. I couldn't do that if I weren't at home.
That's wonderful.
It's all good.
You have a great attitude.
Thank you for what you do, honestly.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your help, and maybe I'll talk to you in the next century.
Every century, Brenda, we got to talk. It's just part of the deal.
Yeah. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Take care. Enjoy your neck cam. Now, do I press the hang up? I don't even know how this...
Oh,
works. Shall we go to?
I think I can hear the engine hum. Yeah,
Johnny Jets firing up the engines. Johnny Jet.
He's a traveling man.
He's been everywhere.
He's been everywhere.
JohnnyJet.com, our traveling guru. Hello, John.
How you doing?
You're not at home.
No.
No.
Those look like the giant forests of Sumatra behind you.
I'm not in Sumatra.
Are you in? Are you in our neighborhood? Because it could also be Redwood. the forests of Northern California.
I'm right outside Toronto, Canada.
Nice. Visiting the fam.
I am visiting the family. We just got in from Europe. Just went to six countries in 12 days. And
wow.
Yeah. And I was set up in the other room in a much better location, but my in-laws just came in. The dog's here. The kids are running around crazy. And I was like, I better go in the guest bedroom.
Nice to see you as always. Johnny Jett was for many years a regular, not only in the radio show, but in our Canadian TV show. And he joins us every month now on Ask the Tech Guys to help us.
Every first Sunday.
First Sunday. Travel like a rock star. So are you going to be home for the 4th or are you going to be in Toronto?
No, we're in Toronto. We go back to L.A. Not until next week.
No Canadian celebrations for our independence.
Oh, we had Canada Day yesterday.
Yeah, Canada Day was yesterday.
Oh, that's good.
I heard it's a really good idea to travel on the 4th.
I've been traveling on the 4th often. I think I was in Russia on the 4th one year. I don't know what it is. Well, I guess you travel in the summer, don't we? So where did you go in Europe, John?
We flew to Barcelona, jumped on a cruise, Princess Cruises.
Nice.
And did the Enchantment of the Seas, which I'm telling you, with kids, it is the best.
Did the kids enjoy it?
I was nervous. I was like, I don't know. They're going to get seasick. It was their first cruise. They absolutely loved it. And
lots for them to do.
There was a kids club. They were like, really? We had no idea. We brought them to it. And they were like, they didn't want to come back to our cabin.
That's great.
They loved it. And then we went to Gibraltar. We went to France. We went to Italy. We went to the Vatican City. We went to my grandparents' home island, Ischia. Then we flew through Germany, went down to downtown Munich. And, it all happened. I bought the tickets 2 weeks before. Everything happened 2 weeks before.
Now, I'm confused because you said Princess, but the Enchantment of the Seas is RCL, right?
No, Enchanted Princess.
Oh, yes. That's Enchanted less confusing Princess. If you get the name of the boat right.
Yeah. Yes, Enchanted Princess. Correct. Have you been on it?
I have not, actually. I've never been on a Princess cruise. That's the original love boat, right? Captain Steubing, Gopher, Julie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they gave me a 50% deal. So the last minute I was like, you know what? I found a cabin. It's very difficult to find cabins. I mean, almost everything is sold out.
Oh yeah.
Flights. And I was just searching and I just kept looking for flights and I found a great deal. I was able to get premium economy there and business back for cheaper than coach.
Fun. This is not probably a good weekend to travel in the U.S.
No, it's terrible. I mean,
apparently Newark is a mess right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, what happened? Airlines, what was that?
I mean, there's been very bad weather for the last 7 days. There's been thunderstorms in the Northeast. In Newark, you know, all the airlines they max it out. So if the weather's fine, there's no problems. But once something goes wrong, then everything just hits the fan. Mm. They just can't keep up.
They don't have enough staff. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
they don't have enough staff to back it up, so people get stuck. Their flight attendants, their pilots were stuck in different cities. It was similar to what happened at Christmas with Southwest, and then to make matters worse, the CEO, who's a great guy, I've met him multiple times, but he made a bonehead decision by hiring a private jet for himself to get out of Newark to go to Denver.
That did not look good. Did not it? A good every look. All your no. passengers stuck in Newark, and you're flying out in a private jet.
He should have. He could have been a hero by saying, you know what, I'm going to grab some crew members that are stuck or passengers. I don't want to take a seat away from the other passengers, and I'm going to hire a private jet and then take him. He would have looked like a hero instead of a zero. So, he really messed up on that one. And it's too bad because he's been doing a good job until then.
So easy, though, these days to make a
everybody's watching
misstep. Yeah, yeah. Everybody knows what everybody's doing.
Definitely.
Looks like the worst airport, according to FlightAware's misery map right now, is Chicago's O'Hare.
Is it? Okay, this morning was Newark.
Yeah, Newark's still pretty bad, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's also another United hub. So they are...
Newark's number two. We're number two. Then Dallas, Fort Worth, Miami, LaGuardia, Boston.
It's gotten better since the last couple of days. Yeah. 2 days ago, it was a mess, and then... But anyway, last week and last month, I should say, you know, I always look at the chat room after I end the call so I can answer questions. And I missed one. One was from iTech. He asked me, hey, I'm traveling to Europe, specifically France. Is buying a local SIM card the best option for talking data? And you know what? Back then, I didn't know a month ago, but now I know. So I do have a T-Mobile phone, which does work really well. But when you get on a cruise ship, you got to make sure you put that in airplane mode.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to do the cellular at sea. It's so expensive.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. So always I set a reminder every night or every afternoon when we come back from tours to turn off, turn on airplane mode. But my buddy Sebastian, who has cellular abroad, he recommended a company called Ubiggy. Have you heard of them?
No.
Ubiggy. Maybe I'm pronouncing it wrong.
Ubiggy. I think that's how you, that sounds like how you would pronounce
it. Works for me.
Okay. So anyway.
Ubiggy, you know, me smally. Yeah.
So anyway, it's for phones that have eSIMs. And I have a new iPhone 14 Pro.
This is a new thing.
So I know people use Google Fi. I've never used Google Fi, but when my data started slowing down a little bit in Italy, I was like, you know what? I don't want to mess around getting taxis and things. So I did sign up and I bought a plan for, I think, $14 for 10 gigabytes, which was way too much. I should have bought the plan lesser for 1 gigabyte because I didn't even use 1 gigabyte.
Because Wi-Fi is everywhere now. But this is interesting because of eSIM, you don't lose your local phone number because you can have two SIMs in there, right?
Exactly. So you can have both. You can keep your regular number. That way you're still getting phone calls. So with Ubiggy, it's for data. But you can use, you know, you can get on FaceTime or WhatsApp. Everyone in Europe uses WhatsApp. I mean, everyone around the world uses WhatsApp, basically. I know. So definitely download WhatsApp. And by the way, if you are going to Europe and you're looking for taxis, I highly recommend FreeNow. Have you heard of them?
No. FreeNow?
My buddy Sebastian, who lives half the year, but part of the year in Italy, he's like, this is the one you want, not only just in Italy, but around Europe because...
So it's kind of the Uber of Europe.
But it's not Uber, it's taxis.
Ah.
So in Italy, especially... an Uber from my hotel to the train station was 33 euros. And a taxi was 7 euros. But the problem is trying to get a taxi right now in Rome or in Europe. I mean, they are inundated with Americans and travelers from all over, but especially Americans. It is difficult. So with FreeNow, but so many of the locals said they use it. They love it. But you do need to give yourself some time because a lot of the taxis either are too far away, they end up canceling on you, or you need to cancel on them. And but it is the best way to keep the taxi drivers honest. You know, in Italy, they know that, you know, it's known that some of these guys take the long way. This way they can't, because it works just like Uber. And you put your credit card in there. This way you don't have to exchange money. It's all on your credit card. And it's really easy to use. But the problem is they don't have a lot of taxis right now that are open.
Yeah.
So if you are looking for one, you need to go to a taxi stand and try calling this, try calling FreeNow. I mean, we almost missed our train to Naples from Rome because we were pushing it. It was difficult to get a taxi.
Did you end in Rome?
We ended in Rome, Civitavecchia, which is not the greatest.
No, that's port. Not Rome. That's just a port. Yeah. But then you took did you go into the city?
Totally. We spent 2 nights. We got a hotel, spent 2 nights in it. I do too.
It's my new favorite city. Yeah. Rome, Paris, London. Great cities. Yeah,
my buddy Stuart, who is a cruise guy, he's like, you know what? Get off the night before in Florence. Just tell the ship in advance.
Oh.
And that way you can spend the time in Florence at night when all the cruise passengers are out.
Yeah.
And then take the train down to Rome.
That's smart. Yeah.
And you avoid the whole rush because the next morning it was a madhouse.
Oh, yeah. And there's nothing in Civitavecchia to see. It's just nothing. A port. Yeah.
And my taxi canceled on me the night before.
Oy.
So trying to get a ride was, I used FreeNow. I used everything. Uber, couldn't get anything. I was like a pigeon at the beach trying to get potato chips. Every time a taxi or driver pulled up, I was just right in their face, and so was everyone else trying to get them.
Oh, my.
Oh.
I ended up spending 350 euros just for a ride into Rome.
Yikes.
An hour and 15 minutes.
Yikes, schmikes.
Oh.
But it's hot, man. You just, you know, it is packed. I also was talking to my buddy Steve Perillo, who has Perillo Tours.
Oh, yeah.
And he helped me secure.
I see their ads all the time. Go to Italy. I'm Steve Perillo. Come with me to Italy. He's a friend of yours?
Yeah, he's a good friend of mine. He's a great guy. But his dad, I think it might have been his grandfather that started a company, but his dad was known as Mr. Italy. He's known
legendary.
As
legendary. Yeah.
Definitely. But he's like, I interviewed him for my podcast. I haven't uploaded it yet, but he's like, I was like, what advice do you have for people going to Europe this summer? He's like, don't go.
Yeah.
This is a guy who runs tours in Italy.
Yeah. No, Italy was crazy when we were there in the spring in April. People are, you know, now that they can travel, they're traveling. It's incredible. It's amazing.
They really are.
Yeah.
But April is one of the busiest seasons. I learned that this trip as well. They said April and May is packed for, and Steve said his busiest time of the year is September.
Oh, interesting.
Which I was shocked, but you know,
it's going to get later and later, right? As people try to avoid the crowds. I'm thinking I'm going in December, right? I'm going for Christmas or something. It's crazy.
But that's crowded too, and it's cold. So, I mean, I like the warm weather, although I don't like the hot.
Yeah.
And it is hot.
It's hot in Italy now. Yeah.
It really is.
Boy, you are full of good trips. Those are really good trips. You, Biggie, for your phone. Yep, I'm going to have to do it because I have Google Fi and I have T-Mobile, but that sounds like a good way to go, especially if you have an eSIM phone.
Totally. And I just brought it up for here in Canada to see if it works. And they said, yeah. I mean, you can get Canada actually. And then but I put in France and the prices are cheap. Yeah. I mean, you can get a 3 gigabytes awesome. For $7, you might as well download it. That way, if you're T-Mobile or whatever your phone service is, it slows down. You just switch it. Yeah. You go into your settings, cellular, and change the primary. It's super easy. It takes 4 minutes to set up. And, it's just a nice little safety net to have.
And free now for mobility to get a cab in many European cities. Free now.
Yeah.
Yep. And Perillo, if you're going to Italy. I'll give your buddy Steve a plug.
Yeah, I mean, he's a great guy. And
And I'll give you a plug. Go to johnnyjet.com. That's his website. He's got free newsletters. He's got lots of travel tips. He's a great guy. He's got a YouTube channel. He's on Twitter, Instagram, and he's got electrical tape. What do you have? What's the gaffer's tape for?
This is gaffer tape, yeah.
What's that for?
Right before I got on, my headset broke. So, I mean, all throughout Europe, I was using gaffer tape for everything. I mean, my kids' headphones broke on the plane. That's like a nightmare. There was a light behind the TV that was so bright, I just tore a little piece off and put it right on
the
light.
That's the best reason for it. You can cover up all those LEDs. It's
terrible lights
all over the place.
It's where you're trying to sleep. Yeah,
yeah. And on the cruise ship, they had a sensor. So when you go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, all of a sudden, there's a whole room lights.
Oh, I hate that.
I covered that whole thing right up.
Oh, I know. I wish I'd had that. This is the best tip of all. Bring a roll of gaffer's tape. Remind me, John, next time I leave town, to take some gaffer's tape from the office.
You can buy travel size now, too. They have travel size, which is great. Before
ahead,
you
throw it. Sorry,
travel size gaffer's tape?
Go ahead. I'll catch it.
Leo.
This is very expensive stuff, I might add.
Super pricey.
Yeah.
But get the travel one. It's tiny.
Yeah.
So you don't want to carry that in your bag.
No, it's too big.
You put this in your carry-on. You want this in your carry-on.
Unless you make a hat of it, then you can just
Buy like three rolls for, I think, $14 or something.
Oh, that's not bad. Travel gaffer's tape. You are full of great information, Johnny Jet. Always a pleasure. Safe travels home. When do you get to, how long are you going to stay in Toronto?
We got to go to New York. I mean, we're traveling.
You're traveling.
I'm back. I'm finally back, Leo.
He's traveling.
He's doing his thing. It's like everybody else. It's been 3 years, dude.
We're going to get Micah on the road. He's never been anywhere.
Well, Micah, I would love to take you, man. I know you want to go to Italy. I'm happy to take you.
You want to go to Italy?
As long as we're not going to Italy.
Oh, what's the first?
I want to go to Japan.
Japan. Yeah. Oh, that's smart.
I remember.
Let's take Ask the Tech Guys on the road to Japan. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right.
I'm ready.
All right.
All right.
Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Really? Japan? Bye-bye. That's a good idea. Japan's wonderful.
I've heard.
Yeah,
I've
Singapore's a good place for children, just in case you want to know. Did you want to show me something? I already did it. Oh, I got to do another one.
There's a marker.
Time is ticking.
There you go.
I just want to pause briefly to invite those of you who watch. You know, I just saw a really cool thing on Squarespace. They're doing their 20-year history. And in 2009, Squarespace, which no one had ever heard of at the time, took a flyer. Anthony Casalena, great guy, said, you know, let's try podcast advertising. He bought one ad on Twitter. They say on the site, so I got to believe them, that it was such a success that 1/3 of their signups for the next year came from Twit listeners.
Holy cow.
Advertising on Twit works. Right now, it's a slow time. You're going to get a great deal if you're interested in advertising. We put together a very good, I think, program for people who are new to podcast advertising. We take care of you. We'll hold your hands because we have a great team here. Half our listeners are in management positions. 65% are involved in company decision making. We have a great audience, smart audience, and I would love to introduce your product to them. You'll get a full service continuity team. We'll write your copy for you. We'll help you with the graphics. You can get ads that are unique every time. As you know, Micah and I and other hosts, we read them live every time. We always over deliver on impressions. We always make sure that you get as many impressions, if not more. We also will help you. We got ad tech that helps you know whether your ads are working. We'll give you courtesy commercials you can share on your social media and your landing pages. I think Squarespace, in fact, has an ad from 2009.
Wow.
That I did on their landing page.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Lots of free goodies, including mentions in our weekly newsletter that goes out to thousands of our listeners. Bonus ads, social media promotion. We know we work. So does Squarespace. So does IT Pro. So does Authentic, the CEO of Authentic, Mark McCurry, who did that early buy, I think, with Squarespace, says, we've partnered with Twit for 16 years. The feedback from many advertisers over 16 years across a range of product categories is that if ads and podcasts are going to work for a brand, they're going to work on Twitch shows. I think we do the best job anywhere. So if you're interested in elevating your business, let us help. Visit advertise@twit.tv today, and you can work with Twit TV's world-class audience. advertise@twit.tv. That's the email address. And Max or Ryan or Lisa will get back to you, and we will get you on board. We look forward to that. I should also mention that for those members of Club Twit, they don't see any ads. We want to encourage our Club Twit members to keep on keeping on. We really appreciate the support. If you're not a member of Club Twit, which you're not because you're seeing this ad, then you might want to go to twit.tv/clubtwit. It's $7 a month. We intentionally keep the price low so it's affordable for as many people as possible. You get ad-free versions of all the shows. You get access to the really incredible Discord. What a Thursday we had. Stacy's Book Club at 9 a.m. with Annalee Newitz's newest, The Terraformers. And then at 1 p.m., an interview at Pruitt did with Hugh Howey, the wow. author of, you know, if you've seen Silo on Apple TV, that's the Wolves series. What an incredible exclusive for club members. We do a lot of those. We're going to do a lot more, including Micah's Hands on Macintosh show, Hands on Windows, Scott Wilkinson's Home Theater Geeks. Just, I can go on and on. I think the club is a great value. It really helps us, and it helps yourself, right? So go to twit.tv/clubtwit and subscribe. And we thank all of our Club Twit subscribers for making this show pod. We wouldn't be doing this show if it weren't for Club Twit, to be honest.
Exactly.
Yeah. More calls? Should we do some? I see Robert on the line here. Let's put Robert
on the line.
Robert on the line. *6 to unmute. Hello, Robert.
Welcome to the show.
Says Robert is there, but I don't hear him. You want your gaffer's tape back, don't you,
Jim? No, he's got to set the timer for
this. Stuff costs a lot of money. This is pricey.
$16, yeah.
Yeah. I can't believe four for $16.
I got some Amazon Basics kind, and it was expensive. So I can't imagine how some good quality kind.
It was cheap gaffer's tape. Don't get cheap. Well, I guess for covering up a light.
Yeah.
Doesn't really matter. Robert, are you there? One more chance. Press *6. Hello. Let's do a voicemail while we're getting Robert on the line. What do you got?
Yeah, this is Jimmy calling from the Charlotte area.
Hi, Jimmy.
About iCloud storage. Is there a way to store my photos and stuff in the cloud without them staying on my phone or my Mac, because I'm running out of space and the only things I can seem to find online is turn it off. But at that point, you know, or if I delete anything from my Mac, it's going to delete it from the cloud, but I don't want to delete it. I just want it off my Mac.
This is a great question.
I just want my space.
So you have two options here. And you know, one of them is set by default. So I'm wondering if you're even running out of space in this case, but basically on your Mac and also in the app on your iPhone, you have a setting. And the setting is going to let you essentially save a small version of every photo and video locally. And then the full version is stored in the cloud.
So it sounds like he doesn't even want the small version.
Exactly.
How big is the small version?
Well, so this is the thing. It does it all automatically. Yeah. And so
you don't get a choice.
Yeah, you don't get a choice. It will actually pull even older photos or photos that it thinks based on the AI, whether you are going to be looking at those or not from your device. Yeah, yeah. It's smart. It's actually a smart system.
I have often, though, if I go back to an older folder, it says, okay, downloading. It shows you a little clock because it downloads the full quality for you to share or to edit. And that's nice. So you got the thumbnails.
Yes, exactly. So the first thing I would suggest is make sure that on both your iPhone and on your Mac, you do have the setting called Optimize Mac Storage. Now, once we get to that point in the flowchart, if you have that turned on and you're still getting this no storage option, you can go the nuke it route, which is essentially to use your iCloud Drive as the place to store your photos.
So store it in the cloud. And I think this is what he was saying, but not on my Mac.
But not on my Mac. So essentially what you're going to do is export your entire photo library. And you can do this from your Mac because it's going to then do the same thing on your iPhone. So you'd export your photo library. You could put it in, if you wanted to, an archive, or you could just keep it as is. You take that and you put it in your iCloud Drive and then remove everything from your photo library on your Mac. Now, here's the thing. Obviously, if you want to gain access to those photos and see everything that's there, you're not going to have a lot of the same features. So it's going to be a little bit more difficult for you to, for example, pull a wallpaper from a photo and put it on your phone because instead it's stored in the Files app. So you may find yourself having to kind of resave photos from the Files app back into your photos library. But this is a way to make that happen. So I think the reason you're not seeing any suggestions for how to do that online is because people are going to go, why would you want to do that? But if that's what you want to do, that's how you do it.
And the chat room is screaming. They've been very well trained, saying if you only have one copy of something, it's not backed up. And that even if that one copy is in iCloud, which is a pretty safe place, it might be prudent to take that blob, that export, that folder, and put it on a hard drive, external drive or thumb drive, and put it somewhere just so you have a copy of it. It's always nice to have a local copy as well as a cloud copy. If you're willing to do that, you don't really even need the iCloud. You could just copy. But I like having both.
Yeah. And someone did bring up a good point. If you don't have an issue with Google and its method of doing things, Google actually does include a pretty cool automatic feature in the Google Photos app that they call Cleanup. And essentially, once you've backed up all of the photos from your iPhone to Google Photos, you can hit that Cleanup button and it will also remove photos from the local library. Again, it's kind of the nuke it option. So you do want to make sure that you're putting these photos somewhere else. You're making a copy of them, but that's also a possibility. And it's a way that I've helped some family members who said, I'm out of storage space. What do I do? I had them download Google Photos and use that as the means to do it.
That's a nice, and that's the key, is it backs up to the cloud, but then it gives you the option to delete everything that's backed up to the cloud. I wonder if Amazon Prime does that. If you have an Amazon Prime membership, you get unlimited backup, at least until they pull the plug. But for now, you get unlimited backup of all your photos in original quality, not even a reduced quality, which is what Google does. But I wonder, I have to look at the Amazon.
Yeah, I haven't seen like a cleanup utility.
Oh, I've got it all copied. Can I delete it now?
Yeah.
That would be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah. That's a good question, though. I've heard people say that before. And what I've always ended up doing is convincing them to spend $5 a month on more storage space.
Yeah.
That's what I would suggest to you, but I know that's not possible for everybody. I know that that's a hard sell, or even the $12 a year that,
iCloud.
Yeah, exactly. Just increasing your iCloud storage. That wouldn't save you locally.
Yeah, he still has to do what you suggest.
Yeah, that's a good point. Never mind. So in that case, it would not work for you.
Buy a bigger hard drive would work for you. All right. Should I do an email? John Ashley, producer. Do some producing. Email, voicemail, email. Okay. Phone call. Don't blame me. Blame John Ashley. Ant just walked in. Did you have a good interview with Hugh Howey? I bet it was incredible.
Great.
Yeah.
It was outstanding.
Yeah. Club members, you got to go check that out. We'll put that on Twit Plus feed, right? So they can listen.
Yes. Yeah. I think it's there now.
Bruce writes, Hello, Leo and Micah.
Hi, Bruce.
Longtime listener. After using years of using Microsoft Windows, started in Windows 95 all the way through Windows 11, I finally took the plunge into becoming a Mac user. I blame you, Micah.
It's my fault.
Been very frustrating of late with Microsoft's updates continually causing blue screens on my older i7 HP desktop, which was operating just fine. So I got a Mac Mini, an M2-based Mac Mini. After learning, and this is just what Ant did too, right? Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. After learning the subtleties of how things are done in the Mac world, I'm glad I made the switch. Who said you can't teach an old dog new tricks? I did check out a few of your Hands-on Mac episodes, found them very helpful. Thank you, Micah.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
But he has two questions. Do I need an antivirus program?
No, not even on Windows do you really need an antivirus program.
And you really don't on Mac. They do a very good job of keeping you safe. I don't use one. You don't use one.
I don't use one. Every once in a blue moon, I have a free subscription to Malwarebytes. I'll download Malwarebytes and do a scan just because not my threat posture, but the other one.
Your threat. Now I forgot.
I know. Security.
Your threat dynamic.
Whatever it is.
Your threat method.
Mine is heightened a little bit. So, but yes, no, you're fine.
I'm having one of those days where I can't remember anything. Did you notice that?
Leo?
It's all slipping away from me. Two. I imported all my photos into the Mac.
Here we go.
The one minor issue was the individual photos now show the date of import rather than the date of creation, which means I cannot sort by date anymore.
Ooh.
Can this be changed? Photo viewer does allow me to view by year, so the creation date does exist somewhere, but not in the file info. It is in the file info. It's in what we call the extended information, abbreviated EXIF. And there's actually I've mentioned it before. There's a very geeky tool that lets you run this program and it will go through all the photos and change the modification date, if you wish, or the file name to match the creation date, all of which is stored in the EXIF data. So it's free. It's from a guy named Phil Harvey.
Hi, Phil.
Very geeky. It's called EXIF Tool. And there's a Mac OS package. There's also a Windows version if you ever decide to go back. And then it's command line. So you're going to have to learn the command line. And let me tell you, this thing has command line options till tomorrow.
Yeah, look at
it goes on and on and on. There's really nothing it can't do, but it's going to take a little while for you to understand it and craft a command line that'll do what you want it to do. Look at all the file formats it supports. Not just, JPEGs and traditional files.
Does Mr. Harvey provide any examples?
Mr. Harvey probably does, but... Because
that would be helpful for someone who's not as...
Yeah, there's some examples.
There we go,
It is complicated. I spent a little bit of time playing with it before I actually ran it.
Paul Harvey was the radio announcer, MT
Paul
Pockets.
Paul Harvey!
Unless that was the joke, yeah.
So this is, I mean, maybe I'm getting a little out over my skis here. I don't know if you want to use something this powerful, but it is the way to do it. This is what I did.
Yeah. And I'm wondering too, your method for bringing them in. Cause if you just brought them in as files versus importing them directly into iCloud or into your Photos app, it may have properly sorted that data if you brought it directly in. So if you basically launched Photos and said import, it may have been smarter about what it was doing when bringing them over versus bringing them into the Finder first, where that modified date is going to be more important. So I think that this tool is something well worth using, but you might try importing, if you're maybe not as comfortable with the command line, importing directly into the Photos app and seeing if that takes care of the issue where it's not Finder that's going, well, I think what's most important to you right now is when these were modified. And I would also recommend checking out an episode of Hands on Mac where I talk about the Finder and I talk about how you can make more sort options available to you within Finder. So you can easily right click and choose when these were, you can sort by date created, date added, date last opened, all sorts of options that might be able to help you sort better. As well.
Oh, and look at this. Thank you, Scooter X. Somebody has written a GUI, a graphic interface for Phil Harvey's EXIF tool.
Oh, excellent.
Which it's available Linux, Mac, and Windows. So it might make it a little bit easier for you to figure out what it's going to do. I have not used this, but it's certainly worth taking a look at. My suggestion is before you run it on all the photos, create a demo folder and try it, you know, make copies and try it on a handful just to make sure it's doing exactly.
Beautiful. What yep. Think.
So now you know the rest of the story.
Yeah.
Your mom made you listen.
Great grandparents.
Great grandma.
And I would sit down and listen to Paul Harvey.
Paul Harvey.
The rest of the story.
Good day.
They wouldn't miss a day of Paul Harvey.
I have a friend who was in Chicago, used to do a show out of Chicago, who got in the elevator and there, lo and behold, is Paul Harvey. And he said, "Hello, Americans." Hey, we're out of time. We're done.
We are.
Hello. Goodbye, Americans. Thank you for joining us. We do Ask the Tech Guys every Sunday, right before the Twitch show. Mm-hmm. That's about 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1800 UTC. You don't have to watch live. You can get download versions of the show at twit.tv/ATG or on YouTube, or better yet, subscribe in your favorite podcast player. That way you'll have it on your device and you can listen or watch. We do audio and video. But if you like to watch live, and if you do watch live, you can interact with us live. You can make the phone call, for instance. All you have to do is go to live.twit.tv. Actually, there's always something going on there. Yep. If we're not doing it live, we'll do reruns of the shows. Live.twit.tv. And if you're watching live, irc.twit.tv is our open to all public IRC, the one Brenda was trying to get into anonymously. And there's also a Discord where you can be anybody you want for club members only. But again, I hope you will watch and listen. Now, remember, the phone is open for all week, so you can call and leave a message for us when we're not on the air at 888-724-2884. You can also email us, atg@twit.tv. We get lots of emails now. It's great. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and a lot of voicemails, too, which is great.
Yeah. Thank you for your calls and for watching the show. We really appreciate it. Anything else to say?
No, I think that's it, honestly.
Okay, Micah will be back.
Have a happy 4th, if that's
have a great
thing you
4th.
Celebrate. Yeah.
No shows on Tuesday for our international. Every year, I'll get an email saying, what happened to the show, MacBreak Weekly, Security Now? No show. What happened?
Because
they don't know. July 4th, holiday.
It's because we switched to drones. They can't hear the fireworks. They don't know.
They don't hear the explosions. They don't know. So we send the whole team home. Everybody gets the day off, which is a good thing. But we will be back here. I'll be back here on Monday. You'll be Tech News Weekly on Thursday with Jason Howell.
And then we'll be back next Sunday.
No iOS today, though, Tuesday.
No iOS today.
And we'll be back next Sunday. So thank you, everybody. Thanks, everybody. We appreciate it. Have a great 4th. And we'll see you next time on Ask the Tech Guys. Have a great geek week now.
Bye-bye.
Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here. In case you hadn't heard, Home Theater Geeks is back. Each week, I bring you the latest audio-video news, tips and tricks to get the most out of your AV system, product reviews, and more. You can enjoy Home Theater Geeks only if you're a member of Club Twit, which costs $7 a month, or you can subscribe to Home Theater Geeks by itself for only $2.99 a month. I hope you'll join me for a weekly dose of Home Theater Geekitude.